Are you searching for the best in online black radio? Then go to blacktalkradionetwork.com, helping you filter through the noise. Real talk, black talk.
The internet is full of half-truths and all-out lies. We've all seen them, and many people on social media complaining about it. Here's your chance to show and prove. WorldAfropedia.com is a black-owned and operated encyclopedia. There are several thousand articles, but we need help. We can't uncover all the truth ourselves. So please, join us and become a writer, editor, or blogger for WorldAfropedia.com today. Every little bit counts. We owe it to the future generations to put the truth out there. Visit WorldAfropedia.com, the African-centered encyclopedia, a global database of African knowledge for the purpose of bringing about global African wisdom and understanding. WorldAfropedia.com.
An investigation by the Vermont Commission on Human Rights paints a disrupting picture, of workplace harassment at the Vermont Psychiatric Care Hospital in Berlin. And African American staff members say the use of epithets and racially charged comments by some of their coworkers have made the hospital a hostile place for employees of color. VPR's Peter Hirschfeld has more.
As he was leaving work in 2007, a worker at the Vermont Psychiatric Care Hospital in Berlin walked to the parking lot and saw that a racial epithet had been scrawled on his windshield by a colleague. The same man, he's African American, had already become accustomed to coworkers referring to him as, quote, chocolate boy. And on another occasion, this one just a few months ago, a staff member called one of the man's colleagues and told them to, quote, put the little black man on the phone. Those are among the findings detailed in an investigative report issued last month by the Vermont Human Rights Commission, which has found, quote, reasonable grounds that racial harassment is occurring at the hospital.
I don't know how you can excuse put the little black man on the phone, or if she got off the welfare bus, or, you know, it's just insidious. It's not innocent in my view. I mean, it is done with malice.
That's Robert Appel, and he's the lawyer representing Ismina Francois, the woman whose complaint spurred the investigation.
Shocking as that report reads, I think it's spot on.
Francois, who is African-American, says she's been subjected to repeated hostile, offensive, and racist comments by her coworkers, from the use of the term colored people by one of her coworkers to the time when somebody remarked that she must have been dropped off by the, quote, welfare bus when she arrived at work. Francois says the harassment has been pointed and persistent. And the investigation spurred by Francois' complaint has uncovered allegations of racial harassment directed not only at her, but at other staff members of color at the state-run hospital in Berlin. Here's Commissioner of Mental Health Melissa Bailey.
We take this extremely seriously, and we are doing everything we can to protect staff.
Bailey says that because litigation is pending on the matter, she can't address specific allegations. Bailey says she finds the report, quote, extremely concerning, and that employees have been disciplined. Bailey says work is underway to address the underlying factors that may have caused the problem.
There's, you know, a few bad actors, and the others are concerned that they want to step up and support their fellow coworkers.
A staff-wide mandatory diversity training in the fall of 2016, according to Bailey, was one attempt to address concerns about workplace hostility. More recently, she says employees have come together to draft a, quote, civility and conduct policy. According to the Human Rights Commission investigation, however, many staff members of color found the diversity workshop to be, quote, useless. And Appel says that his client hasn't reported any substantive improvements at her job and that she still, quote, does not feel safe in the workplace.
And what was most troubling to me was that even after she had enough courage to come forward and report this and beg for diversity training, it took them months, if not years, to respond to that request, and then they didn't do it right. They made it worse.
The executive director of the Vermont Human Rights Commission was not immediately available for comment on Monday, but Appel says the commission now has 6 months to decide whether to file a civil suit against the state of Vermont for employment discrimination. Appel says he and his client are hoping to reach a settlement instead. Francois' primary request, according to Appel, is to be reassigned to a different post in state government. Appel, who's a former director of the Human Rights Commission, is now a private attorney who often represents clients of color dealing with workplace harassment. He says his Mina Francois' story is not unique.
Being a person of color in this community is a struggle. Many of my clients happen to be of color, and the stories I hear are hair-raising and consistent across a variety of workplaces.
For VPR News, I'm Peter Hirschfeld.
A recent investigation by the Vermont Human Rights Commission uncovered disturbing allegations of racial harassment at the state-run psychiatric hospital in Berlin. But data reviewed by Vermont Public Radio suggests the problem is not limited to the Vermont Psychiatric Care Hospital. As VPR's Peter Hirschfeld reports, employees of color experience discriminatory treatment in agencies across state government.
Mary Azenwa hasn't worked at the Vermont Psychiatric Care Hospital since 2014. But when she read the report issued by the Vermont Human Rights Commission last week, the allegations made against some of her former colleagues hit very close to home.
One staff member referred to me as an animal.
The Human Rights Commission began its probe after an African-American employee named Ismina Francois filed a formal complaint in 2016. According to the commission's 35-page investigation, Francois is not the only employee of color at the hospital who's dealing with mistreatment. One African-American man left work one evening to discover that a colleague had scrawled the N-word on his vehicle in the parking lot. The report says that same man was often referred to by some white coworkers as, quote, chocolate boy. Mary Azenwa is mentioned in the report, too, right at the top of page 15. That particular passage tells how Azenwa was mocked by some of her white coworkers for wearing her hair naturally. Azenwa, who spoke to VPR by phone from her new home in Washington State, says her supervisor at one point actually told her to start using chemical straighteners.
She didn't like the way my hair was, and she felt that my hair should be straight.
The jarring accusations out of the psychiatric care hospital stem from a single formal complaint of racial harassment filed in 2016. But according to records requested by Vermont Public Radio, that's just the tip of the iceberg. People of color have filed 35 complaints of racial harassment or employment discrimination against the state of Vermont over the past 5 years. Karen Richards is the executive director of the Vermont Human Rights Commission. She says that based on her work over the past year, she's come to the conclusion that the problem is getting worse.
There are a lot of people that have attitudes that they have maybe been keeping quiet about, but that are now sort of bubbling to the surface because it's become politically and socially, I guess, a little more acceptable.
A workforce report issued by the Department of Human Resources earlier this year provides some statistical evidence to back that claim up. Last year, employees of color voluntarily left the government workforce at nearly twice the rate as their white counterparts. They're also four times more likely to be fired. And when it comes to pay, workers of color make significantly less on average than white workers. Here's Karen Richards again.
I think we interpret the data to say that we've got some work to do in state government.
Mediatrice Muzima didn't need statistical data to learn about racial bias in the state workforce.
You know, it's hard. It's just hard. I would say it's, for me, it's a different experience.
Muzima has been working as a mental health specialist at the Vermont Psychiatric Care Hospital since 2014. She's been in Vermont since 2006 when she emigrated from Rwanda. Muzima worked as a psychiatric nurse before coming to the U.S. She says she got into the field to help survivors of the Rwandan genocide. Muzima says that in Vermont, doing that work has sometimes involved a torrent of racial slurs from psychiatric patients. It's how her colleagues respond to those episodes that can make the workplace so alienating.
My hope was that the supervisor, the charge, and that they will follow up, like maybe a briefing. Something that, you know, just will make me feel like people cared what just happened to me right there. But it never happened.
Muzima says there are other things, too. Being mistaken for other female workers of color is pretty common, she says. Or just being made to feel she doesn't measure up.
You know, I wish people can just make that little effort to know who's whom. I have to prove myself because I have an accent. I'm from Africa. Sometimes they even don't know who you came from. Are you from Jamaica? You know.
Mazima says she isn't looking for colleagues to be fired or to be given special treatment. What she wants is acknowledgement that the problem exists.
Just don't sweep it under the rug. Talk about it. Maybe that's what I want. I want people to talk about it.
That's what Bennington Representative Kaya Morris would like as well. Morris is one of very few lawmakers of color in Montpelier. She says the stories revealed in the Human Rights Commission report are ones that people of color in Vermont already know too well.
And at what point do we say you should not have to experience that just to feed your family? You should not have to accept that as a way of life here in Vermont. When do we say it's enough?
Morris says she hopes that time is now. She and other lawmakers are working on several pieces of legislation, but Morris says leadership on this issue needs to come from the top. Morris, along with Karen Richards and a handful of other lawmakers, have asked Governor Phil Scott to issue an executive order that would require agency heads to tackle the issue head on.
We need you not to just sign the bill and see it go through. We need you to make a very clear, clear directive to our state government that this work needs to begin and begin now.
And Morris says the Scott administration's actions will show just how seriously it cares. For VPR News, I'm Peter Hirschfeld.
Context of white supremacy. Gus T. Renegade in for another broadcast, hopefully to share constructive information on the system of white supremacy. Today's date, Thursday, March 8th, 2018. So I have been told. Next month, 50-year anniversary of the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. This is our weekly broadcast on neutralizing workplace racism. If we have any black entrepreneurs, quote unquote, feel free, dial in. We always appreciate hearing from folks who are, as they say, self-employed, to hear how that improves your workplace experience, makes better how you relate to whites in a workplace environment. Definitely dial in and share. The number is 641-715-3640. The code 564-943. Pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Obviously, the broadcast for folks, if you have problems, if you're having any difficulties on the job and you would appreciate counter-racist suggestions or feedback, certainly dial in the number 641-715-3640, the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. As always, if we have any folks out there, black people, whatever job you have, if you have figured out some counter-racist codification that works in the workplace in terms of solving problems without creating new problems, so you don't have to deal with any of the racist shenanigans in terms of being accused of not being a team player or being too quiet, being aloof, any demotions, you get all of your raises on time, you get any sick leave, vacation leave, personal leave, you get it without question every time. If you need a transfer, no problems. Looks like you're going to be able to hang out, have your feet on the desk, get your work done, and stay until you get ready to retire. If you're in that position, give us a jingle and give us specific details on how you accomplished that feat in the system of white supremacy. I'm sure there are a lot of folks who would like to know. The reports that you heard at the beginning from Vermont Public Radio, they did a series of reports over the past couple of weeks on racism and some of the public government, even positions in the state of Vermont, go New England. Many things stood out in that report, but importantly, towards the end, when they were talking to the victim of white supremacy and she was saying she did some of the counseling work for the Rwandan genocide, racist man, racist woman, most to blame for that as well. But when she was saying that she wanted the suspected racists in the workplace to talk about this, to not just sweep it under the rug, metaphor, to talk about it, and, you know, to acknowledge that this happened. And I think in the workplace, we want to be as explicit, specific, precise as possible with words and what we would like to see happen. Obviously, a lot of times we do not get, you know, things do not work out ideally in our favor often in the workplace, but at least have an idea of this is what I think would be a correct resolution to this problem. It should be more than just having racists talk about racism and how they mistreat you and other non-white people on the job, because racists, buddy, they will clown harder than Richard Pryor if you give them that opportunity. I mean, when I say that, I mean, it could be they hire Jane Elliott, admitted white supremacist, and pay her $10,000 to come in and do a 3-day seminar about how to refine your racism. And then they'll say, oh, no, we had Jane Elliott. She's with the Blue Eyes, Brown Eyes exercise. She came in and did a seminar. We got photographs. I got a selfie. It's on my page and everything. We don't have any nigger jokes around here. Mm-mm. No way. No racism. They'll just get even better at how they do it. You want to be precise, and what you would like to happen is to have this problem resolved so that it is never an issue again. That's what you would like, or whatever else would resolve the situation. With those reports from Vermont Public Radio, with both of those incidents, I also thought it was important. In the first report, there was a suspected racist white woman. She said that this is just a few bad actors, some of the folks who are saying, you know, put that chocolate boy on the phone, put that little black man on the phone, or you must have just got off the welfare bus. I didn't miss that Welsing moment with put the chocolate boy. But that all of this is just a few bad actors. It is no way in the world. You hear that all the time. What I think our caller in Florida, the term we got for that, at least for the moment, if other folks have ideas, but for right now, racial focal pointing, where they try and narrow it to make it seem like not all white people are racist. It's just a small number. There's no way that this could be a problem in Vermont, across the U.S., across the world, if this is just a small number of white people, when white people are a tiny, tiny proportion of the global population to begin with. That is not logical. The other metaphor that stuck out in the second report, when they said that it seems that this workplace terrorism is getting worse, they said that it seems that in this environment, for some reason, it seems like this racist conduct is bubbling to the surface. Quite a metaphor indeed. Continuing, this report actually got updated. That was the whole reason that I found this incident. They had a third report about the same thing, this harassment in the workplace in Vermont. They do not have audio for it. Oh, they did add it. They have audio for it now, but they didn't. But I'll read a little bit just so you can get more of the detail. It reads, the woman whose complaint put a spotlight on racial discrimination in the government workplace says the state of Vermont has yet to resolve the issues that led to her suit. In the summer of 2016, Ismina Francois filed an employment discrimination suit against the Vermont Department of Mental Health. An ensuing investigation by the Vermont Human Rights Commission uncovered a chronic pattern of alleged racial harassment at the Vermont Psychiatric Care Hospital. Francois started working at the Vermont Psychiatric Care Hospital about 4 years ago. In her first public interview since filing the complaint, Francois says it can be difficult sometimes to find the right words to describe the experience. Listen to the context of white supremacy. That is supposed to be one of our primary goals, to find the correct words to use to describe these types of experiences. Continuing, you ever have those moments where you have so much you want to say, but you don't know where to start? I should maybe reach out to talk to her. She's in Washington State now. I was thinking that when I heard the report, for her to be in Vermont, which is on the other side of the country, to now be in Washington State, perhaps we should reach out. Continuing, for Francois, the problem started almost immediately after she first joined the hospital staff as a mental health specialist in 2014. She says it's not uncommon for the mentally ill patients being treated there to use racial slurs. What shocked Francois, she says, was when supervisors would repeat those slurs when briefing staff on patients' behaviors, not supposed to be shocked about white racist conduct. Rather than use the N-word, they would say nigger. Francois says, the first couple of times it happened, I was like, oh, that's not right. You know, we're a group of professionals. We're educated. I don't understand why they feel the need to say the actual word, not understanding what it means to be white. Francois chalked the incidents up to simple ignorance. Ooh. I'd play my sound clip, but I don't have the switchboard. If anyone is ignorant about racism, black people. Continuing, she says she assumed the staff wasn't trying to make her feel uncomfortable and that they probably just didn't realize it was inappropriate to repeat racial slurs in the workplace, let alone in the presence of employees of color. I was new and I didn't want to stand out, Francois says. I wasn't ready to be like the person who is now making an issue of things. But the things kept happening, like references by white colleagues to colored people, for instance, or being mistaken repeatedly by her supervisors for other employees of color. Or the time a group of white coworkers saw Francois arrive at work and made a comment not to her face about her having just gotten off the welfare bus. It goes on from there, gives some of the incidents that you've heard in the audio reports and a few other incidents of other people, also other non-white employees, also talking about their experience where they were, one black male says he was labeled uppity on the job. I think we talked about that before as well. I'll post this if you would like to read. Just the fact that they did a series, I think, is great because you get more details about all of this. I think I will make an effort to try to reach out to Miss Francois to see if she might be interested in talking. That's kind of wild that she's in Washington State now. But I'll post this so the people can check it out. Again, being precise with words, documenting. It seems like this went on for a long period of time, so she would have had lots of instances to document, to strengthen her case, and particularly if it's lots of different people are making these remarks, that this is a toxic, terroristic work environment, and it's not just a few bad apples. This is widespread, and the fact that it's happening and other people are witnessing this and they're not reporting this, they're not doing anything about this, they're complicit as well. So, I mean, you got lots of racist conduct going on in lots of layers, but the thing that stood out with this, if this is happening all the time, Vermont, we've had people call in from Ireland, South Korea, Stacy from the UK is with us on a regular basis. If this is a worldwide problem for black people struggling on the job, we really should be making sure that we're talking about this in a serious manner, thinking about ways of solving this problem permanently and on a day-to-day basis, solving problems, particularly on the job, without creating new problems and devoting time to this. Again, I think this is something that we do not put enough time and energy thinking seriously about, the ways that we're terrorized on the job and what to do about that. Just for comparison's sake, since it's been all the rage to talk about Black Panther, the amount of time and energy that I've seen spent on Black Panther this year, man, if we spent half of that on workplace racism issues and thinking seriously about how to permanently solve some of these problems moving forward, wow, I think we would be in a way better place. At any rate, I will again remind folks, this is not a spectator broadcast. You can certainly dial in. You can also drop an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. Untiljustice@gmail.com. I will keep an eye out as the program proceeds. We can read if you have commentary that you want to share related to your own work experience, or if you just have suggestions that you want to share based on what is discussed on the program, you can do that as well. Untiljustice@gmail.com. Some of the folks who wrote in already, I'm still trying to catch up on emails from when we were on hiatus because of the flood. Person wrote in, and they said that they may be able to call in and give us details at a later time. They wrote in, this is a black female. As you recall, my issues with my troubled firm, she worked at a law firm She called in before to give us some of the details about difficulties that she was experiencing. She says that she was fired. She says, a week after giving me a bonus and raise, they fired me before the new year and said it's not working. I asked why and was told it's not working, and if I have any questions, to email their outsourced HR company. They gave me a check, Cobra info sheet, and a severance, which I did not sign. The language in the severance for 2 weeks' pay was vague and, of course, prohibited me from taking legal action. I immediately hired a highly recommended attorney and forwarded all the notes and shady emails I've collected over the years. I was never warned, never evaluated as promised, and never spoken to about anything. Everything leading up to them firing me was typical, messy communication, fussy paralegal, proxy, and me formally requesting certain information and never receiving a response. Further, I am pregnant. We are expecting, and it was obvious that I was pregnant. I also have my chronic disease. I am under treatment for that. They knew about as well. So now, without pay, without medical insurance, and no respectful severance, I am now leaving it up to my attorney, who believes I have more than a valid discrimination claim. She actually was in shock at their ways. It's outrageous. I thank this show for helping me understand white people and their ways, for reassuring me that I am not crazy and completely valid in asking questions and keeping personal records and emails, which has all been forwarded to my attorney. This process has showed me in so many ways that white people do not care about our well-being, our needs, or how their terrorist ways affect us. They are ruthless, certainly not ignorant. If any listeners have commentary that could assist me in the aftermath or have been in a situation like mine, I would love to hear their advice. Requesting advice, commentary, so keep that in mind. Next person that wrote in. Okay. Oh, now this... Outstanding. This person actually wrote in and compiled their workplace incidents into a blog report. That is outstanding. That is public, obviously, but I mean, if you want to do it that way, you don't have to put the names in for yourself or anybody that you're going to talk about if you're going to talk about specific situations and people on the job. But that's a great way of having a workplace journal. You're thinking about what happened on the job. You get to process what happened to make sense of it, organize your thoughts. Great use of time and energy. Like I said, the number of people that wrote reviews about Black Panther, how many of those people have invested the same amount of time writing about their job? Racism Incident Report, March 5th, 2018. The following is a report of acts of racism, white supremacy committed against me in the workplace on the week of March 5th, 2018. A racist man who is currently my unofficial interim manager visited my cubicle several times today in order to harass and bully me. The following is an account of his racist acts. Number one, on March 2nd, I followed all the procedures necessary to make corrective changes to a load balancing system in the network environment. I executed the changes and there was no impact to the network environment. The racist man mentioned to me this morning that I should avoid these types of changes because I might cause a network outage. The racist man forwards me an invitation to a meeting without providing context. He visits my cubicle and, with his voice raised, mentions that I shouldn't be worried about the meeting. His statement made it appear that I was worried about the meeting when, in fact, I hadn't said anything. After repeating that I shouldn't be worried about the meeting about three times, he provided me with some context regarding the meeting. Number three, the racist man visited my cubicle to harass me about a client's request and had already been taken care of by another team member. Note that he had multiple options for verifying the status of the client's request, for example, checking the ticketing system. Number four, the racist man visited my cubicle to harass me about an upcoming network change that I have to perform at a remote site. The bulk of the conversation included him asking questions about how I was going to proceed with the network change. Note that I had already emailed these details to the client and copied him on the email. Number 5, I have an upcoming network change to complete at a remote site. This remote site has a unique and complex network configuration. The racist man visited my cubicle to ask me questions about the configuration, stating that he wants to replicate the configuration at a new remote site. When I suggested that he should review the site's network configuration because of its complexity, he states to me in a raised voice that the configuration is simple and that there isn't anything to worry about. Racist incident report number 2, a racist man who is currently the infrastructure architect walks by my cubicle and says, hello. I reply, hello, and then he tells me, my voice is deep. I didn't respond to his statement. Then he asks me if I have a cold. I replied no. The conversation ended there. In my opinion, his statement and question translate to the following. We, white people, don't like niggers in the workplace who have deep voices and who try to sound like men. So tone down your voice when you're talking to me. Racist incident report number 3. First thing yesterday morning, I completed and submitted my timesheet for the prior week. I checked that it was submitted several times before starting my workday. A couple of hours later, I received a chat request message from my director stating that my timesheet wasn't completed. I challenged him, told him that it was, and that there must be some other explanation for why he doesn't see my timesheets submitted. I highly suspect that my timesheet was manipulated in some manner to make it appear that I forgot to submit it. Racist incident report number 4. It's happened on several occasions where a white team member will assign me a task knowing that my workday is about to end. Today, one of my racist coworkers asks me to troubleshoot a client's VPN connection that I assume he didn't feel like working on. This racist man arrived at work after me and left before me. Racist incident report number 5. During a meeting, I made this statement that it would be constructive for me to watch how cable testers verify and test fiber optic cabling. The project manager replies back, stating that there's no value in doing this. I replied back, stating that it would be constructive due to the fact that I have limited knowledge about physical cabling media. End of the report. I will post the blog racisminfo.wordpress.com. I'll post it so that you can check it out and see some of the archive posts, workplace racism information. As I said, great use of time and energy, and in, at least in my opinion, and the author, if you want to dial in either today or sometime later, and just let us know, has this been helpful for you in terms of your use of time and energy? If it has been helpful, making a blog, and like I said, you're not identifying anybody publicly or where the name of your employer, has this been helpful? How so? You know, just when did you start doing this? That might be helpful, might inspire some other people to write, get that workplace journal, even if you don't make it public. A couple quick things I did want to say about some of the incidents that he touched on. I think the voice thing, brilliant analysis, spot on. I think we talked about that before. In fact, Allison Manswell, she was a guest on our program way back in 2016, black female. She wrote a book about racism in the workplace. Listen up. She said specifically that that's one of the things that comes up all the time, where she feels like she's almost having to tell black males to not be men in the workplace. Don't talk really loud. Don't be aggressive. Don't stand and hover around whites. It reminds me explicitly of what she talked about when she was on the program with us. The other thing with the unofficial interim manager, I guess, who would come up and, you know, say all these things, you know, there's a meeting, there's nothing to be worried about, wasting your time and energy. I talked about that. I think I wrote that on the description for the broadcast today. I think Chantel, she called in last week where she has a race soldier who was on her job would just come up and say dumb things and waste time. Whites love to do this just to be a distraction. And then they'll turn around and punish you and say, oh, you're not being efficient. See, you lazy niggers, you come in here and you're messing around and you're not getting your job done. Where they're doing everything that they can to chip away at your efficiency and just you being able to be focused, serious on your job. And also, I wanted to go back to the female who wrote in previously, who worked at the law firm where she was fired. I thought that was really, really important where she said that she was pregnant, visibly pregnant. We've heard that before. That came up on the cows even before workplace racism existed as a segment on the cows, where we had a black person who dialed in and they were talking about that there was a different black person on their job, married, expecting the whole nine, and then they fired them right a few months before. I think it was right before they were supposed to get married, but loving to disrupt black people who are in some sort of attempted family, attempted marriage, attempted parents, loving to disrupt that sort of situation. Exactly, she pointed out, now we can mess over your whole health insurance and your income and everything else, not to mention your stress levels and plans and everything that you got working on. I mean, they love to have that sort of chaos. No notice, no nothing. The importance of documentation, even when you do electronic questions, you query for information and they don't answer, that is a response. That is great, particularly if you have a list, a stack of emails where you're asking for questions, you're asking for correct information, and they're not responding, not responding, not responding. That works great in your favor. I will stop there. Number again, 641-715-3640. The code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. Make sure you share the program on social media networks. Let people know it's on. I'm sure that you have some black people, victims of racism in your social media family who would benefit from a dialogue on workplace racism. But we'll get to the folks who dialed in. If you have commentary on any of the folks who wrote in, or if you have your own commentary you would like to share, feel free. Lines should be open.
May I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, thank you for taking my call. This is Red in Nevada. I didn't necessarily have any commentary on the people who wrote in. I definitely feel for the female who is pregnant and she got fired. It does remind me of a story at my current plantation where one of the upper managers, she had came into like the training area and she was kind of talking about her experiences and, you know, having to make the quote unquote tough decisions and how she said she had to fire a pregnant person. But that was because, you know, they had apparently given this person so many chances and then she just couldn't, you know, get the job right. But, you know, she didn't say, of course, like what the person looked like. But I feel like, you know, I can understand, you know, how they like to disrupt things. But I guess it's kind of interesting or funny or whatever. I actually have my own black hair story to tell. Earlier this week, I had decided, because prior to this week, I had been wearing weave in my hair because I didn't, you know, want to stick out. And I feel like there's a lot of people, especially at this job and in the state, really, I feel like don't necessarily, you know, wear their natural hair. But I decided to take the weave out. And the first thing that this white woman, the same suspected racist who refuses or to get my name right, before she says good morning or anything like that, still says my name wrong. And she's like, she says, what happened? And she had such this disappointed look on her face. She was like, I liked your hair the other way. And, you know, well, what, you know, why did you basically take it out? And I'm like, that wasn't, you know, what happened to your hair? And I'm like, well, that wasn't my hair. That was weave. She's like, yes, I understand. But, you know, it looks so much better. Basically, you know, just kind of saying just how sad she was, like, about my hair being, me wearing my natural hair. And I just kind of noticed, I guess, maybe an example of racial focal pointing, because there was another white woman in the room when the suspected racist said these things to me. And the white woman didn't, you know, of course, they're not going to try to correct because this racist behavior from one of them. Well, she says, oh, well, I like your hair. And I'm like, I don't really care. I didn't ask for y'all's unsolicited opinion. Another white woman also said basically the same thing. You know, well, what happened to your hair was nice the other way. But the other thing that I wanted to just quickly mention was that I spoke about how there was a, or there is a quote unquote transgender person. And I didn't necessarily have to ask, how that person wants to be referred to. I just, the main thing that I really have been focusing on is just listening at this job, but more so than talking. And so it came out that she was, and this also is around my hair, she does, you know, reference herself as a female or woman or whatever, and she's a racist per description. And she was just talking about her quote-unquote partner's hair being a renegade and rebellious. And it was just, I'm like, I didn't ask for any of this. Just like, so I just kind of just eased my way out of the conversation and let her carry on that nonsense with another black female about, you know, how her partner is having so much trouble with her hair. So I guess that was, that's like my quick story about, you know, the racism that I've witness and experience this week. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Red, did you say the other racist woman who was there after the first racist woman made her tacky comment, like, oh, I can't believe what happened to your hair and botched your name again. And the other racist woman came in and said that she did like your hair, said that, you know, I didn't solicit, you know, any opinions. Did I hear that correctly?
I didn't actually say that. I wanted to, but no, I didn't actually say, you know, I didn't solicit any opinions. She just kind of gave me like this weak smile. She knew, and I could see that she knew that the other woman was clearly practicing racism. Didn't say anything to her, but then she was like, I guess to kind of make it seem like, well, you know, not all white people are bad, or that's how I felt. That's how I took it. Mm-hmm. But it was like, these are three different white women. I apologize.
Got it. Okay. Yeah, that's pretty standard. White people are not ignorant about racism. For a white person, I'm sure that she knew, oh yeah, tacky act of racism on, we'll say, Susan's part. I'll leap in and show her that there are some kindly whites. All of us aren't gonna, you know, just talk bad about her and her hair. Standard. And I think that's the correct mentally, beautiful to just have that mindset that this is just another racist too, because they'll try to do that to have sometimes the white person, they'll say something nasty to you and then they'll come back and say something complimentary to you to build you back up and get you back. I've seen that. And then other times it can be exactly what you experienced, where it's white person A will make the racist comment or do something racist, and then white person B will come in and be the savior, the good white person. Not all of us are bad. Confide in me. Come along. Great to remember. Oh, yes, this is a racist two. And no, I'm not confused about what's happening here. Racist one, racist two, and racist three. That hair thing. Wow. Coming up quite a bit today. I suspect there will probably be ongoing commentary if you continue with your natural hair in the workplace. There will probably be ongoing commentary both directly to you and when you are not present about your hair and their thoughts about you not having your weave in anymore, having some black self-respect, some might say. Job well done. Job well done, Red. Other folks, oh, in the transit, that was music to my ears as well, the listening, music to my ears, listening on the job. We can do a lot of counter-racist work just listening and not talking. Other folks, do you have commentary?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. I've had a very terrifying day today. I'm actually still in my work clothes. 8 p.m., close to 8 p.m. my time. I've been up since 3. Give you some context of what it is I've been dealing with. I deal with a lot of sarcasm and some commentary that's not sarcasm, but it's the same commentary, and I often have a hard time telling the difference. And this is one reason why I don't horseplay and joke at work. So, for instance, an individual I may be working with will say, don't worry about it, let me do it. And they literally mean to let them do it. Or they'll say, don't worry about it, let me do it, which is supposed to be a hint that I should be in there doing it for them. And I have brought this up on numerous occasions, and my questions are not answered. And I believe that the individuals that I work with believe that answering questions is beneath them because I don't have the same rank and position. Well, that led to an incident today in which I walked off the job. And what occurred was we were preparing some equipment to be lifted, some very heavy equipment. It's almost 2,000 pounds. And prior to setting up this equipment, this individual made a comment that was one of those comments that that I have a hard time deciphering. So I asked him directly. I said, are you being serious or was that sarcasm? And they looked at me and they walked away. And they came back and I repeated myself. I said, you didn't answer my question. I said, was that sarcasm or were you being serious? And they changed the subject. They said, well, I'm going to go up here and taking care of this equipment for preparation. So they went upstairs. Now, this equipment that needs to be prepared is being lifted by a steel rope that's probably just a little bit thicker than the diameter of a pencil. And that tensile strength can hold a lot of weight. And this weight that we're about to lift 100 feet is, like I said, roughly 2,000 pounds. That is a ton. So while I am unraveling this steel rope off this motor, this electronic motor, and it's going up the 100 feet, it also needs to come back down 100 feet because it's going to be lifted up via a pulley. Well, it goes up 100 feet, starts coming back down, and I notice on this motor that this steel rope is crushed. So I yell up. I said, hey, this steel rope is crushed. And they said, what? I said, this steel rope is crushed. I need you to inspect it. They said, you need me to inspect it? I said, yes. And they didn't acknowledge me. So they come back down, and I said, are you going to look at this steel rope? They did not acknowledge me. Now, how this equipment is going to be hoisted, we have to stand under it. That's 2,000 pounds. So they walk off. I follow them, and I say, are you going to answer my first question? They said, what was your first question? I said, my first question was, were you being serious or sarcastic? Because I can't tell, and I need to be able to tell. And they didn't answer the question. And so I stood there, and they just looked at me, and they were still working. And so I said, well, I have another question. I said, I asked you if you're going to look at this steel rope. This steel rope is crushed in two different places. It's not completely torn, but it is crushed. Are you going to lift this 2,000 pounds with us not standing underneath it with this rope in this condition? Are you going to take a look at it? And they just looked at me, and their eyes got big, and they had a smile on their face. So at that moment, what was in my hand that was one of their tools, I put down, I turned around, and I walked away. And they said, hey, where are you going? I did not answer them. I grabbed all of my belongings, and I walked off the job site. Now, mind you, where I'm actually parked is a quarter mile away. I have to either be bused, driven, or walk to this job site. So the first thing I did was I called my union representative, and he picked up the phone. He said, what's going on? I said, I walked off the job site. I'm going to tell you why. And I told him the story that I'm telling you now. Now, in the middle of me walking back to my car, this individual whom I walked off the job on starts driving in their truck, and they're to the left of me. And while he is doing that, I tell my union rep, I said, oh, by the way, he is driving right next to me and asking me where it is that I'm going, and I'm not going to answer him, during which time that individual in the truck turned around. So my union rep tells me, come to the union hall, and we'll have a talk. So I head up to the union hall for a mediation between my union representative, another individual who is who works on behalf of the union representative, and then the person who the job I walked off of, he walks in. We're going to have this mediation. And the union rep begins, and he says, well, you know, we have a guy here who says he's having some issues on the job, and you just want to get both sides of the story. This person interjects and jumps in and says, I have no idea what's going on. And I'm calm. My voice is, I don't raise my voice. I have a notepad out. I also have my recorder on me. And so I begin telling them the story, the union rep, the story as to why it is I walked off the job. And I said, I've had repeated issues with not having my questions answered. Now, he says that I can ask questions, but I'm telling you, how he responds to me, he either answers my question with a question, or he answers my question with a comment that says, oh, it's not that hard, or it's not rocket science, or use your brain. Now, mind you, I'm asking a question because I've taken everything into consideration that I believe I can take into consideration, and I get this response. Now, I work in one of the most dangerous jobs in the world. If you pull up job safety statistics, it's always in the top 10. It beats out military service. Probably the only one of the few things it beats out is maybe oil rigging, because that is extremely dangerous. So my union rep asked me, do you feel unsafe working with him? I said, yes, I do. I said, I'll tell you why. I said, the beginning of the reason is because he doesn't answer questions and he's not clear with his communication. And he said, yes, I am clear with your communication. I said, no, you're not. I said, by the way, and I brought up an old scenario. And when I say old, it happened last week. I actually called in about it on the last workplace racism. This is the same individual who asked me about operating a piece of equipment without being certified to do it. And he asked me why. I said, I'm not going to put myself in that position. He said, what position? I said, if somebody asked me, or if I damage a piece of equipment like you just damaged a piece of equipment, then I'm going to lose my job. Now, I brought that up in that same scenario. He says, I didn't damage a piece of equipment. I said, yes, you did. I have the picture right here. And he got quiet. Now, the union rep wants us to keep this between the union and not take it back to the company. And I understand the reasonings why. And so he said that this sounds like a personality conflict and a communication issue. And he asked me if I'm willing to go one more round with this individual. So I can see, I said, yes. I said, but we have to work on some communication and dealing with this power dynamic, in which I know that he has position over me and he can get me fired. And I'm also dealing with the company that we're working for, since we're under a union, and they can also get me fired. I said, I'm between two rocks and a hard place here. And my union rep conceded. I also sent my union rep the picture of that cable, and he said it actually needed to be replaced. And he said that the person whom I work for was in error and that he should have stopped the job right then and right there, and that he should have taken care of it. His response was, well, there wouldn't have been that piece of the cable that was crushed was still on the drum of the motor, and it wouldn't have been holding the weight directly. And I said, that's not my issue. My issue was that I asked you a question directly about the safety, and you didn't answer it, just like you don't answer any of my other questions. That puts me in the position of me not being able to trust my life in your hands. Here's some irony. We had a union meeting tonight. Our regional safety manager was there, takes care of a whole part of the country. Regional safety manager, he says what he has to do at the union meeting. And then our union representative speaks after him. He asks people, how many people in this room have a certification to operate this piece of equipment?
few people raise their hands. He said, how many people don't? A lot more hands go up, to include mine. He said, I'm bringing this story up because today we were called out to a job site, and this piece of equipment was being used, and it caused some damage. It cost $250,000 damage. And what they found out was that the person who was directed by their supervisor to operate this piece of equipment did not have the certification. After that meeting, my union representatives came up to me, and they were completely shocked. They said, man, it was just irony that you came in and you had this issue, and then we go out to a job site today, and they said, well, you did the right thing, and we want to applaud you. But they said, just make sure that if you ever have any issue with this person that you worked with before, just don't walk out on the job. Call us, because if you walk out on the job, then, you know, that can be bad issues. You can be written up or you could be fired, and we can't protect you. Now, I've been thinking about this all day. Besides the fact that these people terrorize us, I'm going to tell you what the other issue is, because of how we've been conditioned. It's been very frustrating to me, because after going to this meeting, this mediation, I actually felt sort of bad. And I'm trying to figure out, why in the world do I actually feel kind of bad for this person that I have to put myself in this position, which is not even putting myself in this position. I'm self-advocating because this person is unwilling to or is incompetent to, and I have to make a decision whether I'm going to be passive and take my life in my own hands, or so-called do things by policy and protocol and get this individual in trouble. And I think that's half of the terror that we have to deal with, because self-advocacy can get us in a position of destruction, and not advocating for ourselves can get us in a position of destruction. That's mostly what I wanted to share, but I want to tell the listeners that in this situation that we're dealing with, this war, if you have any question about doing the right thing or what it is that you need to do, just know that both ways you are compromised. So you're better off doing the right thing, especially if your life is in your hands. I don't care what people threaten you and your job, any of that kind of stuff, because these people are not playing around. And they will switch up stories just like he tried to switch up a story, and I had to pull the photograph out about this equipment that he damaged last week. They're not playing around. I'm not playing around. And by the way, I did record that my entire day and that meeting. If anybody has any questions about it, any of the things that I used to record, send an email to Gus. I will be more than happy to tell you what techniques I use, what equipment I use, and all of that. And thank you for listening.
Wow. Thank you for sharing detailed, and that's what I mean, explicit details in terms of just employing counter-racist logic on the job. And it sounds like, if I heard correctly, you were two for two in situations. When I say two for two, the situation with the cable, you noted that, hey, this could be a problem. Perhaps we should, you know, stop and investigate, which at minimum seems like it's correct, if not stopping the whole job. I think you said that the cable actually needed to be changed. And then the previous situation that I remember you discussing last week with us, where the same race soldier is, oh yeah, how about, you know, hop up there and give it a ride it around, knowing that you did not have the proper credentials. And we talked about this last week, and really we've talked about this for years, white people encouraging you to do things on the job that are against regulations, where they know this, where this could be something where if you do it, it won't be that, oh, this white person is going to get, you know, reprimanded or something because they told you to do it. It'll be you get in trouble because you did it. We talked about this for years. Two for two, being excellent and just doing the correct thing, following policy and procedure, just do the correct thing. That's it. And as you stated, absolutely right. You can do the correct thing on the job and get fired. Certainly you can do the incorrect thing on the job and be fired. So in my view, I think it's best just try as best you can, do the correct thing, follow counter-racist logic. And if they really want to fire you, they can do that anyway. So you just try as best you can and try to minimize that as you go. I think great job in terms of staying calm, great use of technology so that you had pictures of the damage that was caused last week when he was driving the machine and may have been trying to blame that on you. Yeah, ride around it, so I can say that you did that. And at minimum, it'll be your word against my word. But great job with the photographs. Great job with recording the meeting and whatever else to make sure that you had information. Great job of asking questions, both about the cable and about whatever remark he made before, you know, all of this got to the point where, you know, you felt you had to walk off the job site. I would say, I think when you started, you said you were still in your work attire, and I think you said it's like 8 p.m. or so wherever you are. I would just say self-care. When you have one of those days that's that stressful, I mean, if it gets to the point where you have to walk off the job, I would say that is a massively stressful day. I would recognize that. That takes a huge, I mean, if you're still sitting in your work clothes right now and you had the union meeting, this, that's a long terrorism-filled day. I would just try as best you can to do some things to replenish that are constructive. I don't know what you're into. If you, you know, are a gym person or a hike person, or if you have some people that you enjoy that are helpful for your soul, you feel good, you all can do something constructive, I would try and do that, because I could hear the stress in your voice in you telling us what happened. And I mean, you re-experience all of that trauma when you have to go and retell that story, when you come home and tell, you know, your partner, your boyfriend, girlfriend, whatever it is, or your children, or whomever you talk to, you re-experience those emotions and getting upset and remembering what happened and what they said and all that. Just try as best you can, if you can do some things this weekend, because that sort of stress, that kills Black people. That's why a lot of Black people, we end up being overweight, eating bad foods to compensate for all that anger and rage that we feel about all that. Just try as best you can to be constructive and take some time, maybe even take the whole weekend to do some major self-care, because, man, that is a massively stressful event to deal with. But it does sound like you did some awesome counter-racist work there, and probably will have more to do tomorrow. Did any of the folks that are with us, did you have either questions or suggestions for the caller situation that we just heard, anything that we've discussed thus far?
Sir,
yes,
might be heard.
Yes, sir. Thomas in New York.
Peace, Gus, right poorly, I'm sure. Me as well. And the gentleman as well that just spoke. I did have a question. I know that you've been very codified in your speech, but I did want to know what industry that you work in. And my other question for you is, if the union gave you an out as far as possibly working with someone else, why would you choose to go back to work with the same person that's been terrorizing you?
Great questions. I work in construction, and not all branches of construction are equally dangerous. They're mostly dangerous. And one, the construction, because you're often around motorized equipment. But I will say this also in regards to construction. They tend to be, they have a history and legacy of unionized jobs. And if you know a little bit about labor history and union history, those jobs were essentially selected for a certain kind of, for a certain group of people whom, well, After so-called emancipation, you're still not free. We had skills. We actually had skills. And by virtue of being Black, we're obviously not going to be getting paid the same type of wages. So, oh, that's cheap. That's not free labor, but it's still cheap labor hiring us, which essentially, in their mind, took jobs away from them. So a lot of them organized unions, and those unions, quote unquote, ran around terrorizing and killing us, and we weren't allowed in those unions. So there is a legacy of a certain kind of mentality that goes along with that. And what I'm getting to, the point is this, is that there's a term that I often hear. There's two terms I hear. They often call people stupid, to include themselves, and they often use this term common sense in replacement of using language more specifically, or policy or directions. Everything's just common sense. Well, common sense doesn't get the job done, especially if it's dangerous. You need specific direction. Are we going to the back? How many degrees? How much is this? You know, so there is that element with it, which is what makes my job extremely dangerous, because I end up having to ask more pointed questions. But with, like I said, with the legacy of these folks, they have an authoritarian mindset. So any kind of asking questions is considered either challenging authority, or you must think I'm that smart, or it becomes a circular thing in which you have to modulate, is the word that I will use. You are constantly modulating, one, your surroundings, and you're modulating their emotional behavior to try to save your job. The second question, I believe you said, why would I go back and work with this individual? That's a good question, and I'll tell you why. When I walked off that job, I walked off that job with all intents and purposes of never having to see any of these folks ever again, and they pursued me. Now, there's one thing that I know about specifically this individual. This individual is not necessarily in high regards. They used to be, but they've kind of lowered a little bit. So that could have been seen as them running me off when there have been other people that have good things to have said about me. Two, this individual still has some skills that I need to acquire. They are actually extremely good at their job. Their communication is extremely poor. Their demeanor is poor most of the day. And they have to take a lot of breaks and smoke, and they've even admitted themselves that they've wasted on an average of 2 hours of company time a week just by smoking alone, and that they're trying to improve that. I had that on audio recording too. But despite the tear that happened today, and mind you, I wasn't this agitated during the union meeting. I made sure that I meditated and I took some deep breaths and I went in and remained codified. But there are way worse people, and I think it's sad that our options are worse and then worser, and you have to take your pick from that in this system. And so that's why.
I think that completes.
Clear, I got you. And that unfortunately, they do have a lot of skills that they harness, and they don't mind teaching each other properly. But I found that a lot of them, when it comes down to training someone black, they do it because they have to, but you can tell they don't want to. They play this game where, it's not a game, but just like what you say, they're very vague. They don't want to answer questions. They're not going to give you in-depth training. I did have some workplace racism of my own. I worked in a new job, as I said, back in the office setting. I'm a couple blocks away from the UN, and I've had quite a few machine guns pointed at me as the cars rolled past this week. A lot of activity there. But I had this very strange situation because it's no clear-cut boss at my job, but there's someone who seems to be in charge. And this person is very nasty. It's a female. I've mentioned her already. She's the owner's administrative assistant. So she's, pretty much a supervisor. Everyone that has given me the lowdown on her has to have negative things to say about her. Now it's me and there's another black female that works with me. She's the receptionist, and she's also given me the lowdown and told me a lot of things about her as well. So I already know what to expect. Either way, she's always in people's business. If I'm on the phone answering a question, she'll stop and listen and want to critique things afterwards or whatever. Just in random conversations, she'll jump in and want to be the alpha. I've noticed this about her. So everything is pretty hush-hush because she just pops up out of nowhere. She's mixed me up as one African, clear African person that works there. And she's called me this African several times. And, we, you know, it's just like to me, I don't know. She's always picked up the Asian people. She's calling one his name and that one's name. And, you know, you can clearly see that they're not even from the same Asian country. In particular, there's a new person that started working a few weeks after me, a Dominican girl, an older lady, I should say. Probably a little older than me, but there's a woman whose desk is inside of the person who owns the business's office. So I kind of got the lowdown from this girl that's the new CDO. That's the new CEO, and she's the new CEO's administrative assistant. So I could already see that this lady who's been terrorizing me has started terrorizing her. And her response to me is like, I'm about to, pretty much be in her position. So she's threatened by me. That's pretty much how she takes it. But I'm walking. I'm carrying. One of my responsibilities is to empty the paper bins around the office twice a week, and I'm supposed to go by a schedule, but. The schedule that I have and the policies that are there, it goes out the window. Everything is dictated by what this lady says to do. She says to do it now, you do it now. It doesn't matter what the, and I've been told by the HR lady, just do what she said. Everyone just, so she's the boss. So either way, I'm carrying a bin of paper, that I missed. I usually go around with something to make it easy, but I missed this one bin. So before, instead of going back around with the heavy cart, I just took it and I'm carrying it. And as I'm carrying it, this white male, a heavy set white male, so heavy he uses two canes to walk around with. And he walked in since I started. He marvels in my size. I'm 6'5". I'm a big guy. Oh man, you're such a big guy. It's that, how whites do. It's that, you play sports, that type of thing. And either way, as I'm carrying this bin, I see him put his cane down and he starts reaching toward, my genitalia area. So I stop down back. So I'm giving him a look and he's like, oh, eyes open. So I was like, okay, just tell me that, hey man, so either way I have these papers. He wants me to do a lot of his personal work for him, which I don't mind. It's a lot of copy work and stuff I'm used to. I'm experienced with doing. They didn't have anyone who was experienced doing a lot of copy work before. So that was one of the things that was good to say I knew how to do the job in the first place. So, I try to get it done as soon as possible. So I'm trying to explain to him, let me dump this bin. I'm going to come back to you. But of course, this white female just happens to be walking past and she starts scolding him about, he's doing the paper right now. How dare you ask him? She just scolded this man. And mind you, this is a partner, and she's just a secretary, but she scolded him. And he was, oh, I'm so sorry. He was so, so it was just like this, real big deal with that whole thing. And, the Spanish lady who, the Dominican girl who, the new secretary to the CEO. She says that she stresses the way she dresses. She dresses very, very Hillary-ish, but with a dress, very nunnish. And she says, this is the Me Too look. And she winks. So I thought that was interesting. And I'll mute my line.
Well, I mean,
Wow, I don't know what that means. The wink, you're supposed to, like, you're some on some sort of inside joke or inside code that you're supposed to be privy to.
Well, she mentioned in a way, like, she's very talky and happy and bubbly. So, she mentioned in a way, like, when she winked, like, you know, this is her way of stepping up. You know, I got my Me Too look. Because, like I said, the new CEO is a woman, and I haven't been quite sure as per which side of the fence she swings on. I know this isn't Saturday. I'm sure y'all get the hint. So I'm not sure if she's trying to look that way to maybe that's the new way of, I don't know. I'm confused, but I was confused too, but that's how I took it, because she's bubbly and she probably would have winked in.
How interesting. I'm confused about that myself, but be that as it may, with Thomas in New York's, I guess, series of vignettes, the first woman, make it plain, the first race soldier that's mixing up everybody's names. You see those same tacky patterns, racist, got it. You don't have to waste a whole lot of time on that. I would correct these folks every time, though. Same thing with Red. This is my name. That means that we have to go through this procedure 365 times until we get to 2019. Then that's what it's going to be. Black self-respect. I think, wow, I mean, it was such a litany of items to contend with. Before you got to the crotch grab, I was already thinking of Donald Sterling and that sort of conduct in the workplace, and you talk about Me Too, unwanted touching and ogling and all that sort of thing, all of that, in my view, you can put that in your unwanted touching code, and just being mindful, if anything, Thomas's event, because I don't think you said that you were just, you know, sauntering down the hall with nothing in your hands. I think you said you were carrying a number of materials going down the hall when this tubby fella comes and puts his cane down to adjust your fly, ostensibly. Like, even then, you got to be on guard for race soldiers. Even if they look tubby, like they can barely walk, race soldier. That's what we're talking about. I mean, that's not anything to celebrate or jump up and down and be happy about. That's the type of environment that we're in, that you have to be on guard on a constant basis and just have that in mind, that I can't be surprised. I can't be stunned. These types of things happen regularly under the system of white supremacy. Just be prepared so that you already know, whoa, hey, that is not acceptable at all. Back up. Like, whatever, you know, phrasing you want to use, but wow, that is quite a bit to have.
Yeah, and Gus, you know, I was carrying one of the blue bins that you throw the, we work in the office, you know, everyone gets that sheet of paper that comes before whatever they copy, and it gets thrown right in the bin when you pick it up. It just has your name to separate them. So I would say the bin, it was full, so it was probably about 50 to 70 pounds worth of paper. So I'm trying to move fast, too, and that stopped me right in my tracks. I went back like, yo, you know, and that, yeah, mm-hmm. And I said, I knew it. I knew this guy was, I knew something was up with him, but now I know.
Context of white supremacy. Be prepared. You do not want to be in a position of being surprised. Just, hey, this is the system of racism, white supremacy. When we talk about that unwanted touching and sexual harassment in the workplace, try to emphasize that as well. Males, females, children, that is a part of your code that you should be real solid on. You have already practiced what you want to say, what you want to do. That might even be a situation to document on the work. Really, I would say any sort of sexual unwanted or sexual behavior on the job should absolutely be documented. Doesn't matter if it ever comes up again, even if it's just to make sure that you don't forget. Oh man, that day that dude tried to grab my groin, like, woo! Document anything sexual that happens, got to be documented. Other folks, the number again, 641-715-3640, the code 564-943.
3, pound, press star 6-1 if you would like to participate. And let me
just... Hey, Chris, I just wanted to add two more pieces when you're done.
Oh, okay. Just give me 30 seconds. This is another, in my view, great illustration. I think we already had one caller mention it today about not doing any sort of like horseplay or joking around on the job. Another great illustration why. When you are working with racists, you do not ever want it to be, well, you know, you were joking around that time. You know, you went and grabbed such and such. You know, you went and put him in the headlock. So, you know, we always thought we could do a little horsing around. No. I do not do any horsing around. I do not do any joking around. I don't tell jokes. I am here to be serious and to do my job. That is the reputation that you want. I was going to say from day one, that's the reputation that you want from the time you fill out the application. Thomas in New York, you said you had a quick addendum.
Yeah, the next day after this, the human resources lady comes up to me and she says, she gives you a lot of work to do. So I said, you know, no, it's nothing I don't mind doing, you know, because, you know, I don't want him to stray you away from your regular duties and this, that, and the other. I said, no, it was just a copy job. It was going to get done real quick. You know, it was no big deal. So she says, oh, okay. So she walks off. And then later on that afternoon, she's in another building. So I go over there twice a day to check on that building, make sure that everything is set. And then I go back to the other building. So I go over and she comes over and asks me if I get along with the female that's torturing me. So of course I'm like, yeah, we get along. It's great. You know, I didn't want to say anything that, you know, cause I see it's a small office. It's friendly. I don't want to say nothing that maybe, okay, he's not down with the, you know what I'm saying? So I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Understood. I think that's great to keep, I don't, especially if you just started on a job. I don't have a problem with anybody. I would try and stay out of all of that. Just to me, anything that's like office gossip where you're talking about somebody that's not present, that sort of thing, not involved in that at all. We don't have any problem. Things are fine. Let's get back to work. Other folks who dial in if you have a hand up, if you have commentary you would like to share, if you have suggestions, comments on what's been shared thus far, or if you have your own situation you want to share, proceed. If you have a lot of background noise, if you know you're like listening to, I don't know, the TV is on, or if other people are making noise, you can just watch the background noise. That would be great. You can use your mute button if you're not speaking, and then you can just unmute your own line when you are ready to speak. Other folks we've not heard
from. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Greetings, everyone. Based on, I'll just make comments on what I have been hearing with the lady who the white people were commenting on her hair. I wasn't there, so I can't make a totally accurate statement on it, but it may have been an opportunity to speak directly to if it was a question on why did you change your hair, it would have been a I probably would have spoken directly to the question if they asked it, put it in a question. I'm not saying that from a outsider standpoint. In 1990, I cut all the hair off my head, and it's still that way today. And I had a good reason. I had a good reason on why I did it. And there was an occasion or two where someone asked me, that happened to be a white person, and I spoke directly to it. by stating, and I'll just paraphrase it, by stating that due to racism, from the idea in mind that as a reaction to it, that non-white people, non-white black people have always had to place too much emphasis on their hair. So I cut all of mine off to symbolize that if not what's on your head that counts as what's inside your head. And basically I did it because by stating that my idea in mind, they would leave me alone, and they did on that issue. With the whole thing about not calling calling you by your name, yes, I would suspect very strongly that that white person actually never need to have any correction. They do that on purpose. They do that on purpose. And the reason why I said that, because I also, quote unquote, legally changed my name also in the 1991. And what I did, if someone did not call me exactly by that name, I would ignore them. As simple as that. I would ignore them. And plus, I had I was on a job that had a uniform that had a name tag. So you couldn't say that you didn't know, you know, what it was, because it's sitting right there on the person's chest. But if they didn't call me by that name or mispronounce the name, it depends on who the person was. If it was a non-white person, I would give them an opportunity to correct it. But for the most part, if a white person, I would just ignore them. I wouldn't say anything. And that quickly changed, very quickly, as far as that concerned. It would be laughter if you had the chance to observe on how quickly the adjustment was made with me changing my name, my last name. With the gentleman that was speaking about him walking off the job, I think he mentioned that in second thought, he may have not did that. And if I am correct on that, I could be wrong, but if I am correct on that, I would agree, because it could be interpreted as a act of anger. And counter-racist codification states that in the act of attempting to solve problems, make sure that you, or do the best you can anyway, that you don't cause any more problems for yourself. Because believe me, white people are very smart on the trauma, on the problems that they can cause, and they know the right, they know the correct means of doing things, and they know what it means to what justice. The value of justice is. They just make the choice of not doing it. They make the choice of not doing it because they want to mistreat people. So they're very aware of that, and they would turn that against you. They can turn that against you. I've experienced that also in meetings. What else? It was something else. That's all I can think of right now as far as what's. But I would recommend, if there is a young person, high school, college, there is one consistent caller, participant that is in college. There are some things that we are taught or the tradition to prepare for. And I would say the things that is talked about on this program, in addition, is some of the things that automatically it should be made a tradition that young people are taught to have those things prepared as they are planning the process of employment. So it doesn't be a situation where you're on the job and now you're scrambling to try to make these type of adjustments. You already come on the job understanding that I have to have a recorder. I have to have a logbook, you know, that sort of thing, what to look out for. One thing that helped me on the job that I was on the fire department, they kept a daily log. Matter of fact, I always like to study things that happened in the past. And I can recall going to, when I first got on, some of the fire stations, and you can still see the log books. They would have them in a closet somewhere that goes back 10 years and literally of everything that took place that day, whether it was an emergency call, whether you went out to go to a elementary school, something like that. So of course it should be understood that individually one should, keep up with everything that goes on around them also. It's very vital. And I am a testament to tell anyone who wants to hear that when you present your documentation to a white person or white people in the job environment, they understand that this slave, non-white person is much more prepared than the average non-white person into what they are attempting to do to them that's incorrect. And that's all I have to say right now. Thank you.
Documentation, extremely helpful in the workplace and just in general, reading and writing, more important than watching television. Great suggestions as well. Just again, making sure in the workplace that we are going about trying to solve problems without creating any new problems. And certainly, if we could get younger Black people to get codification with regards to the workplace earlier, knowing about documentation, having your codification. I don't discuss politics on the job. This is how you deal with unwanted touching. Recording device, documenting, policy, and just all of that. I mean, some of these things I think could be codified in probably a brief pamphlet. I think Mr. Edward Williams, his book is not super long. It's less than 200 pages. Some of this, you know, could be distilled in 50 pages or less, I would think, into something that's really easily readable. Allison Manswell, her book is pretty short too. I think it's less than 100 pages to make it really simple. Quick read, just some of the quick core counter-racist concepts in the workplace that would be helpful for young Black people. Need something to do, easy task. Do we have other folks that we have not heard from at all? And especially if we have any people that have figured out some codification that works on the job. I feel like we don't often get too much of that. People have, you know, figured out some things that work well. That is always welcomed. Other folks we've not heard from at all, if you have suggestions or your own situation, proceed.
Good evening, everyone.
Greetings.
I'd like to, and this is my first time calling in since your return, Gus, and definitely glad to have you back. This incident didn't directly affect me, but I worked in a medical facilities, particularly a military medical facility. And I've spoken about one suspected racist female, young white female. Now we have an additional young white female. I suppose she couldn't be any older than 22. She may be even 19, 20, somewhere in there. But so we have two young suspected white supremacist females at my workspace. So I walk into a room, and I hear them having a conversation, and I hear one of them saying, "Yeah, Asian people,
Hispanic people and even black people too. And so I'm always listening and just trying to be aware of my surroundings. So I'm definitely paying attention to what they're saying. I'm taking care of another task while they're sitting here talking. So, and then the other white female says, yeah, like when I used to work at Taco Bell, some fast food place, I can't remember. When I used to work there, my manager would never hire people if my manager couldn't pronounce their names or their names sounded black. So I'm like, I'm just thinking, interesting. And then I continue with my task, just listening. Then the other white female, who's in a tragic arrangement, says, yeah, who recently got married to this non-white black male, started saying, yeah, my husband, used to be boyfriend, now my husband, he hates his name. He really wants to change it. He really hates it. And he said, whenever we do have children, we're going to give it a real, she didn't say white name. She might as well have to say a white name, but going to give him a real common name to where you just can't determine, the race of the child or the person. And I just thought, that was quite interesting. And my whole code with these white females is to stay away, limit my contact unless necessary. I suspect at one time one of the white females came to me to the place where I usually conduct my business. She came in and informed me that a client or a patient was there. And I'm like, okay, good. And then she proceeds to tell me about what her and the patient was talking about prior to her coming back and letting me know the patient was there. And she continued to carry on the conversation for a while, where she could have just said that and left it alone. And just my gut feeling, I don't have any type of proof of this, my gut feeling is that, and this is the one that's married to a non-white black male, she didn't have her military uniform on. She was in her civilian clothes, and she had her hair down. And I suspect she was carrying on this conversation with me just to, maybe she thought that she was looking cute that day. I don't know. This is what I suspect, because it was kind of strange to me. And she wanted to show me, she had like a different outfit on that I've never seen before, and it was pretty colorful, and her hair was down, wasn't in within military standards at that time, which she shouldn't be doing, really, but I'm not in a position to tell her differently. And I just suspect that she just wanted to show off. But that's all I have for now. Thanks for letting me share.
Right on. Appreciate that. Glad to have your commentary. The ignorance that was mentioned, I think the segment about the racism, white supremacy in Vermont, they were saying, the victim said that she just chalked this up to ignorance. She just assumed that the white people didn't know any better. I say again, she is sadly mistaken, and everybody who takes that position that white people are ignorant or naive or they just don't know any better, you have been tricked. That little vignette right there, where these little white girls are on the job and talking, oh yeah, we just didn't hire any of the folks who, we can't pronounce your name, you're just not getting a job here, and all that. There is no way you can be ignorant about racism. And you're watching this happen every day. And I mean, I am sure that's a very different conversation if there are no niggers present, in terms of what that might sound like. Oh yeah, we just did. It might just be that we just didn't hire niggers on the job over there. All of the Jamals and Kufi, nah, get on out of here. Get on the welfare bus. That's what they said in the Vermont piece. That's not ignorance about racism, and obviously that's not just the white Man, great job listening. You said that repeatedly, I think, Red. If anything, for folks, if you listen to the workplace racism segment, that is something you should be doing on the job, being alert to things that are happening around you, if it's conversations, things that are being said, things that are being done. I think we've had people who said that they had some of their race soldier coworkers were sneaking up on them on the job or sneaking up trying to spy on them. Be alert about your surroundings in the workplace. Just that alone can pay a lot of dividends in the job in a system of racism, white supremacy. This is not the time for you to have your Beats headphones totally covering your ears so that you cannot hear anything. If you're going to wear earbuds, I know some people listen to the cows on the job, grand. Maybe just do the one earbud. I think some people have said that that's what they do, and that way you have the other ear open so that you can hear what's happening around you so that people can't, you know, sneak up on you and try to do things. Or you can even throw them off. Sometimes you have the earbud in, but it's not on, so that you can still hear what's happening around you. That is a part, I think, of being an alert counter-racist soldier in the workplace. Other folks?
Gus, if I may.
Oh, yes, sir. Go ahead.
Yeah, just very quickly, I left out one part, and it just reminded me of, I guess, the rhetorical ethic that a lot of suspected racists have. After the one white girl said that her manager at her former place of and where she was an employee at, she said that, oh yeah, we reported him for discriminating. She didn't say anything about racism, or definitely not white supremacy, but she said, you know, oh yeah, we didn't like that, so we reported that, or we found a complaint against him. So, yeah, just another example of them trying to pretending as if they're practicing justice, and I'm not so sure that that even happened, but that's all I have right there. Thank you.
For sure. That's what I said before about that conversation might sound very different in the backstage, Dr. Joe Fagan, where it's no non-whites present as opposed to front stage. I'm sure that conversation, I'm sure they were aware that you were present, or it might have been some other non-white people close enough to hear what they were saying. I do not believe that either. If all of the whites, or even half of the whites who are watching their white homies and coworkers mess over black people on jobs and not hire them and things, if they were ratting them out and reporting them, we would not have workplace racism on Thursdays at 8 p.m. Eastern and 5 p.m. Pacific. They're lying heifers. Racist man, racist woman, racist child. Other folks we've not heard from at all. If you have commentary, proceed. I'm sorry?
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir. Caller in Florida. We got you.
Yes, thank you very much, sir. Greetings to Gus, the host, the listeners, and callers. I wanted to start out by it was a incident, well, not really an incident, just more of a observation. Because at my place of employment, I knew it was going to be something, some kind of a major, I guess, revelation about race coming to be, I guess, in the up and coming weeks. Maybe, I guess, it could be some pending lawsuits for, I guess, the term they may use is discrimination. Because we had the NAACP, the lady came through once again. She came to the job on Thursday, and I think this was an act of racism by the clerk. He and the another powerful white male, they went to some kind of conference, so they weren't there when the lady came the first time. Then the black lady came on Monday, and I know she's from the NAACP, and she knows she came in once again, like, you know, hey, is Mr. Blank, you know, the clerk, is he here? And I said, well, you know, I can go and check. You know, I was very courteous, and she was courteous to me. And, you know, she said, you know, he's expecting me. And the lady told me that he was gone last week, so she told me to come back. The reason I'm pointing this out is when she left, she was back there for about maybe a good 10 minutes. So every day, the rest of the week, like I seen him on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and today, apparently he's called in sick, I guess. So I don't know what happened, but I think it has to correlate with the victim of racism, the black lady, I guess, coming in maybe talking about something race, or, you know, race-related, racial, in regards to the mistreatment of black people, non-white people. And the powerful white people are looking very, I guess, stressed out physically, at least according to me. Which leads me into this next incident. And the context of this is that we've had a new black female employee. She wasn't introduced in what we call, like, these little monthly meetings. So, like, I think she started on, I believe it was the 8th of January, so it's almost about 2 months. So, in the beginning of February, nobody introduced her because, you know, when a new person starts in the office, usually what they do is, the supervisors, they'll introduce the new employee in their department. So she was the only person at this point in time. And to also add, my supervisor had to take a day off. She had to go take that mandatory mental health class that we all have to do. But even still, we still had other people who could have introduced her. So she mentioned how, wow, like, nobody introduced me. So, you know, I was thinking about that, and it didn't seem like nobody else really had much concern about it. So a month later, which is last Friday, and another part to it is that once the meeting started, my supervisor was there this time, and she was talking about we're going to be doing passports and things like that in our department, you know, and she didn't mention the new black female. So it goes to the next supervisor. So she says, hey, you know, the warden, I'm going to say warden number two, but, you know, the more powerful white woman, she presiding over the meeting. So she says, okay, you know, all of the supervisors, do you have anything? So she goes to the second one after mine's done speaking. And she says, yeah, you know, we have a new person. And then, you know, it was a white woman. So that was the first white person that got introduced. And then she goes to the next supervisor, and she introduced a white female, the traffic area. And then the third time, the supervisor in juvenile or in civil, she introduced a white man. Okay, well, he wasn't really new, but he was just returning back from another courthouse. So that's three white people. And then number four, it was in the civil area. It was new female that was being introduced. So, like, at that point in time, I wasn't really, like, uncontrollably upset. I was just ready to just speak out, I guess. You know, I mean, this is a room full of people, and I ain't never really did this before, you know. And I think when it comes to how black people are perceived and stigmatized on jobs and in society, we are expected to direct a certain amount of force toward each other. Like at this point, I had looked over across the room and I could see the black female was like very upset, you know, very neglected in a way, because I was standing on the other side of the room. So the warden, she had said, "Oh, you know, does anybody else, you know," like by the time she had finished talking, I had my hand in the air, like way up in the air, and I'm tall too. So what she did was she ignored me. Okay? Like she looked ahead to the side and say, "Well, does anybody else have anything?" So I don't know if she was predicting what I was going to say. So she ain't had no choice but to call on me. So I said, "Yeah, you know, we have a new person as well." And, you know, I said what her name was. And, you know, and I said she did not get introduced last month. And I said this in front of all of the, you know, white people and whatever. And everybody was just looking at me like they was, like they were the ones that was shocked. Like, oh my gosh. And then she was blown away. Like, she couldn't believe that I had said that. So, you know, I felt like I had to say that because I think that was racism, and the white people in the room and the black people, you know, and of course the black people, they was giving me props after the meeting was over, and the white people didn't really say too much, and the black female said thank you, and I just felt like I had to speak out on that, and I didn't care who liked it or who did, or, you know. Pretty much, that's how it ended. That was last week, and that's all I have to share right now, and thanks.
Well, excellent demonstration of black self-respect, in my opinion, because I think a lot of times in the workplace, race soldiers, they have groomed us just to be filled with anti-blackness and to dislike each other for any reason, for no reason, to just anything but to look out, stick up for each other. To do that in front of a room full of racists, where in my opinion, they have deliberately ignored this victim of racism, because from what you said, they're not just introducing other new racists to the facility. They're introducing people that are not even new. Like, we just want to give a shout out to Fred. He's not new. Everybody knows Fred, but he wasn't with us for a month or so, and he's back. And give a shout out to, I mean, like, wow. Like, you just go rubbing in. Like, oh, okay, so yes, we did not introduce the new Negro when she arrived, but any white person can get a shout out, introduction, anything, anytime you like. Doesn't matter. Like, that's the way it came across to me. Like, we knew, they knew that they were doing this deliberately, that they were just being tacky and racist with this whole procedure. And then when you didn't step forward to yell and call everybody racist crackers and devil, just, hey, we got, you know, another employee that was new. She did not get introduced last month. Let's, you know, give her the same recognition. What's the issue there? Like, if anything, in my view, the white says, I cannot believe that this nigga just got up and messed up our good fun. We were having a trashy time. We were totally ignoring her. She was upset about it. We knew what we were doing, and he's going to get up and go, oh, this nigga here, like, we're going to make sure he doesn't get invited to the next. That's the way that I processed it. That's my understanding of racist man, racist woman. These type of things are not coincidence. This is not an accident. This is not a, whoops, we just forgot. It just, you know, didn't we had so much upheaval in Black History Month? We were trying to, no, this is tacky racism. We intended to ignore her. Again, phenomenal job of black self-respect. I'm sure she was really, really appreciative of you just speaking up for her and saying, especially if you noticed that this was bothering her during the meeting, you know, them calling out, shouting out all these other white people and then not doing anything for her. So maximum black self-respect, major commendation, great effort. Great effort. Any other folks that are listening in have comments, suggestions on what you've heard thus far, or if you have your own commentary? If we've not heard from you, you should definitely speak up.
Can I be heard again?
Yes, sir.
Yes, the caller from Florida reminded me of a past experience that I had. You mentioned an act of self-respect, and it was one that I recalled based on what he was talking about. We were on an emergency call, and when I was near retirement, one of my last supervisors, he was near retirement also. He retired before I did. We worked together for about maybe five years or so. And this is one particular occasion, we were on emergency call, and, white male, his attitude reminded me of the term called micromanagement. I'm sometimes not sure what that means, other than it possibly could be a situation where a person is speaking to you very loudly and telling you things that it's obvious to them that you already know how to do. You're already trained in doing it. And they would just stand over you, so to speak. But nevertheless, not only that this white person was doing this, he also was raising his voice and very loudly. And I had a habit when people was communicating, attempting to communicate to me in that manner, I would just go somewhere and in this case, go back on the truck, you know, or walk away from that person or ignore them. And speak directly to what I thought they was doing. And myself and the other tailboard guy, we did that. And without us having to go any further than that, this lieutenant I was talking about that retired before me, he spoke up. He spoke out on our behalf. He spoke out on our behalf, myself and the other tailboard guy. And basically told this white person, you're not going to talk to the members of my crew like that. And me being what, you know, my experiences, you know, on the job, you know, I had like a grin on my face, you know, actually. And this white guy got so mad. If they say, you know, white people, when they get angry, they turn red. Well, he turned red. And he told us to go back to the station, and myself and the other gentleman on the tailboard, you know, two black males, we didn't have to say anything. The supervisor, he did all of the debating and dealing with this person until he finally just gave up on the whole issue. About what he was attempting to say and do, you know, the whole bullying type of situation, without myself and the other guy not having to say a word, you know, actually. So I have experienced it. I have experienced it several times on the job that I was on, and the call from Florida reminded me of it. Thank you.
Indeed. Appreciate that, retired firefighter. Black self-respect on the job. Outstanding. The number again, 641-715-3640, and the code 564-943-pound. Press *61 if you would like to participate. We had several people wrote in since we went live, so I'll try and sprinkle those in the last hour or so before we wrap things up. First person, on March 5th, 2018, Khalil Mack, number 52 for the Oakland Raiders, came to my job. I think he used to play for the Seattle Seahawks. I think he was on the team that won a Super Bowl, in fact.
Anywho, it was said months in advance he would be stopping by. It was unclear as to why he was there. I suspect they were using him for a promotion to sell trucks. I was thinking, this is racial showcasing. When I first saw him, he seemed friendly, so I thought maybe I should get an autograph for my brother, who has been a longtime fan of Oakland. I noted all the suspected racists that were Eagles fans, mind you, this is Pennsylvania, running up to him pretending to be a fan. A few of them had on other team t-shirts or jerseys. They were trying to take pictures with him. Tacky. I heard he told one suspected racist, "We can take the picture, but that has to be covered," pointing to his Dolphin logo t-shirt. He took the picture with him, and others were becoming trashy with Mr. Mack as well. I approached, calling him Mr. Mack, showing black self-respect, and asked for a picture. He said thank you and that he appreciated me. Later, I was talking to a male who I suspect is non-black, non-white Latino. He stated that Mr. Mack and the other black male that he was with had stayed the night in town with a white family who also work at my job. I suspect this family is racist, but he told me they don't even like black people. I was told they were showcasing Mr. Mack at their home on Facebook and other sites. I brought this up to another non-white black male, asking if he knew the ball player stayed at a suspected racist's house. He replied, "They not racist. The daughter is cool. She works in the back." I shook my head and said, "Okay. The level of confusion is high in Pennsylvania, worldwide." P.S. Also, the dad, racist suspect from the family who worked with me, was walking Mr. Mack around the plant, showing him the production floor, while a camera crew followed them. Black self-respect theme for the day, and yes, in my opinion, some form of racial showcasing. I don't know if they were trying to do a commercial, or as he said, trying to sell vehicles, or whatever it is, but yeah, I think race soldiers, they will do that sort of thing if they find a chocolate boy who might be more famous or a pretty good athlete or what have you, won a Super Bowl or something like that. Oh, yeah, we can get that chocolate boy to come in here and do a promo for us. And then, you know, after they forgot or he's taken off his jersey and they don't recognize him, he'll just be another Negro. Other folks that we've not heard from, if you have commentary, questions, you have your own situation you want to discuss, proceed.
Can I be heard?
Yes, ma'am.
Good evening, Gus. Good evening, callers and listeners. This is the caller from Wisconsin. I just wanted to weigh in on the hair situation. I had a situation of my own, a workplace racism situation of my own. So frequently, I my hair is natural, but sometimes I will, if I don't feel like doing anything to it, I'll wear wigs or I'll put a drawstring ponytail on or something like that. And I have one of these fake ponytails on, and a suspected racist female came up to me. She's like, "Oh, I love your hair." And I'm like, "Thank you," you know, really deadpan. And she's like, "Oh, I wish I could do that with my hair." And I'm like, "Mm-hmm." And so I'm walking by her to leave the cubicle that I worked in at that time. I was walking by her, and she said something about me and patted my back, except she tried to touch the hair at the same time, and I was really creeped out by that. And then later on, this same female walked up to me and tried to get a hug, at which point I sort of stepped back and said, "No hugs." So that was my hair situation. But I typically don't get a lot of comments about my hair because I work with males, but every once in a while I'll get one of these comments when I change my hair up. I just learned to ignore it and just keep on working. But so my workplace racism situation, I have I'm a software developer, and I have we do a sort of development where we have this board, and this board has a bunch of tasks on it. And it's these high-level tasks, these very large tasks, and they're broken up into very small tasks. And so these large tasks are prioritized on this board, where the top task is the highest priority, and of course the bottom task is the lowest priority. So we were in a meeting. We have a meeting every day to discuss what progress we've made on the task. And the highest priority task on the board is a task that I worked on and that's actually completed and that's going to be in production, which means that it's going to be client facing and everybody's going to see it. And so we start this meeting, and this non-white Indian male on my team, he's like, oh, what about that task there? Because I don't think that she completed it. And, you know, I think there were some questions on it. And I just sort of sat there and I waited for him to finish speaking. And I said, well, didn't the architect say something about that? Didn't he respond to those concerns? And they were like, oh, yeah, he did, and he's fine with it, and everything's okay. And I just didn't say anything after that. I didn't say thank you or anything like that. And so this meeting continues, and the project manager in the meeting is like, well, we haven't finished any of these large tasks, and that's a problem. And I said, well, the highest priority task is going to production tomorrow. Does that not count as a completed task? And he says, oh, yeah, I mean, you know, these other tasks. And I didn't say anything again. So it just seems like, you know, of course, the whole niggerization at work, my work is being minimized, of course. And so it's really interesting. You know, I just, as Mr. Fuller states, just sort of stay in the question lane, ask questions, and then don't say anything. Let them talk and answer those questions. With that, I'll mute my line. Thank you.
Great job with the hair component, just being real deadpan when they, oh, I like your hair, any of that, and just keep it pushing. When they, oh, I wish I could, keep it pushing right back on the job. Like, I'm not swayed at all, regardless of, you know, what you have to say. And just guarding your personal space. Great job with that as well in terms of watching your space when folks are coming to do the hug and all that. I think we talked about that last week in terms of doing no touching at all, not even doing the handshake, but certainly no hugs and just being real clear. Like I said, that's one. If you need to practice your wording so that you are real comfortable and rapid fire on whatever you are going to say or whatever you're going to do. We talked about that as well. If you need to move away and give a hand or a stiff arm or whatever it is to make sure I do not do any touching in the workplace and certainly stay in the question lane, something that we emphasize on the broadcast a lot. I know Mr. Fuller is a big advocate of that in the workplace setting, asking questions, doing more question asking than statement making. Other folks dialed in, if you have commentary, if we've not heard from you at all, you should definitely speak up if you have your own situation or did I hear someone?
Have you heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I guess. Just wanted to give a quick follow-up. I got a couple other scenarios. First, I want to quickly mention that I don't usually listen in, dial in and listen into your show. I usually listen to the archives. And so I don't know if it's something with the website, the TalkShoe website, but I can't seem to download with my tablet anymore from the archives there. So I don't know, again, if it's something with the website or not. Just want to make you aware of that. So going back to a situation that happened at my children's school, going back about October time frame, I called in and I mentioned about, and I actually sent you an email of the very racist email that supposedly students had hacked into a teacher's email account and blasted an email out targeting a black teacher. The black teacher has not returned to the school since then. And from that, I had some conversation with the principal. The principal planned to have some forums that would discuss racism, or she didn't call it racism, discuss hate, behavior, discrimination, or whatever other words that she used. I was not able to participate in a forum, but I asked that if notes could be taken and I could be informed of what happened at the forum. And she had mentioned specifically, says, yes, I would get the notes out to you and all other parents. And that was back in October. The forum was supposed to happen in mid-November. And I kind of let it go, didn't really chase her down and try to, you know, get follow-up and all, but no follow-up happened. No notes had proceeded from her office to any of the parents. And it wasn't until, you know, I kept listening on the cows and just started to bring my mind back. I said, wait a minute, I'm not letting them off the hook. So I went back, emailed, and I got no response. I emailed again, and this time copied one of the other admin, I think it was just one of the social workers or so within the school. And almost, you know, within that day, I got a response back about the results of the forum. It's apologizing that she didn't send out any notes and all, thinking that one of the other secretaries or so had taken the notes and sent it out. And the whole time I'm getting this feeling of, you know, I wish that this black person would just go away. We don't want to have to keep answering to this black person. He keeps coming with questions and all and trying to get results and answer to the investigation that had, because of that email, the police had gotten involved and they were trying to find the child who, the student who, or students, plural, who are responsible. Because it's an ongoing investigation, there's no conclusion yet. There has been no discipline yet that had taken place, except that some of the people or students that they believe might be responsible, they had some potential avenues for them to go through some counseling and different training or something. But the problem was that I had with all of that was she mentioned something about, you know, we want to have more things, have the community come together with some potluck dinners or something like that to get the community talking so they can learn better about respecting one another and to discuss ignorance and hate. You know, some conclusions or some answers of how do we deal with ignorance and hate. And I just once heard you kind of talk about more than once, they're not ignorant of what they're doing. They're not ignorant about racism. And I fired back saying, I'm sorry, but you cannot come to some type of conclusion or solution if you're not addressing it for what it is. This isn't ignorance. It's not, you know, maybe hate, but it's not ignorance. You know, this is racism. Let's call it what it is. Then you can kind of, you know, get to some conclusion or some solution. From there, she invited me to participate in some other discussions with the superintendent. The superintendent called a group of parents together, a group of students together, other faculty together in different group settings. And he's going around, he's a new superintendent, he's going around to different schools to kind of query and get an idea of how they can lay forth their plans for the upcoming year and so on. So I had some concerns about the math program, so did some of the other teachers, but I brought up this issue about the racist email that happened, what measures are being put in place. Here we go asking the questions, right? What measures are being put in place so this doesn't happen again? Oh, well, we fixed that. It's not going to happen again. We changed it so that passwords have to be updated. Okay, fine. That stopped that problem from happening again. What other things are being put in place to keep, you know, racist, and I specifically called it racist behavior, racist hate crimes, and what other things are being put in measure, put in place to keep things like this from happening again. And when I brought that up, all of a sudden everybody's turning at me, all the different parents there, you know, there's only one other non-white parent there. He was Hispanic and I was the only black, all the rest were white. But all the chairs and eyes turned to me and kind of looking at me, who's this guy talking about race issues, you know? I also brought up to the superintendent as well as one of the other parents there, because he's asking questions. What are the things you like here at the school? What are the things you like to change? What are the things you like to keep? So on and so forth. I said, well, one of the things I think that we should change and start looking at is the faculty is not a representation of the student population here. You've got 40% Hispanic and X amount that are black, white, but the faculty is not a representation of the students here. He agreed and talked about, you know, okay, we definitely need to change that. And before the meeting was over, you know, I'm listening and trying to see if there's going to be some follow-up. You know, what are we as parents, what are we going to gain from this? As far as, okay, here are the things you're saying that we're going to address, that you're going to address when you go back to your office. So how do we follow up with that? You know, and when I asked that question, There you go with the questions again, right? How, what kind of follow-up do we as parents receive? Or do I go to a website so I can see the things that's going to be agenda for the next upcoming years, and so on and so forth? And so, it's kind of long story short, I wanted to just stress that the principal really wanted to try to go down this path of addressing ignorance and hate. No, it's not ignorance. This is racist behavior. Let's call it what it is. And then, again, with the follow-up that wasn't happening, it's like if you don't stay on them, they're just going to sweep it under a rug and just continue on and act like nothing's happening and everything's, you know, back to normal. Well, it's not back to normal. You still got racist issues happening in the schools here. So just wanted to share that. Other things, but let other people share if there's other comments there. Thank you for allowing me to share.
For sure. Thank you for the update. Remind folks, we always appreciate updates from callers. If you dial in, kind of let us know how things evolve. That way we get to, you know, see what counter-racist tactics are successful, which ones are not as successful. Just helps us as we all continue to learn, try to solve this problem. With regards to the archives, I tried to announce it a few times. I posted on Facebook and Twitter earlier in the week. The iTunes feed has not uploaded. The Talk Shoe feed is connected to that, is not updating for whatever reason. So the two most recent programs are not available, but or they're not available there, but they are available on SoundCloud, Black Talk Radio Network, and elsewhere. I posted the links for our SoundCloud site and Black Talk Radio, and you can download the two most recent programs that are not in the current iTunes feed. You can download or stream if you just want to listen online, but they are available there. Hopefully that problem will be corrected, but at least in the meantime, while that's getting sorted out, the current content is still readily available, and I'll post the links once today's broadcast ends. I'll make sure I post the links. With regards to the school situation, our SoundCloud is it's soundcloud.com/RWSWJ. Replace white supremacy with justice. The school situation, exactly. You have to pursue, and I mean in that sort of situation. Now, you imagine any of these transgender issues or gay issues that are coming up, where if a gay student or transgender student had been bullied at school, and oh yes, we're going to have, you know, a meeting, we're going to have a seminar and discuss these issues, and we'll have notes, we'll get them out to all of the concerned parents, and then they don't send anything. No, I don't think so. I think racism, white supremacy, consistently, that's the sort of tacky, and I can't even say it's, you know, a poor effort, because they're not interested in discontinuing the practice of racism. They are committed, devoted to the practice of white supremacy. So they're just birds chirp, dogs bark, whites practice racism. That's what they're supposed to do, to not follow up, to not call back, to let you know, yes, these are the measures that we've put in place to see that these type of incidents never happen again. Of course, they're not going to use correct language. You have to be there consistently throughout the process to, you know, challenge, question, love question asking, questioning them about the correct words. This is not about ignorance. This is about racial terrorism, and what are we going to do to see that this doesn't happen? Asking for specifics. That's also what I said before, when the folks in Vermont, they were saying that they wanted white people to talk about these issues, to acknowledge that it happened. That's why I said you got to be more specific than that, because whites, they will generally clown. They will seminar and symposium you to death, and even make it so that probably a number of whites can make a good amount of money coming in to be speakers, and all of this where they're still practicing racism. So you just want to be specific, which is exactly what it sounds like the caller attempted to do. And again, with the school situation particularly, you definitely want to have a long-term vision about, you know, what you want for your child's education as white people continue to terrorize in the racist school system, K through postgrad. Any other folks that we missed completely? Anyone that we've not heard from at all have commentary?
Have
greetings, Emmy.
A lot, yeah. A couple of things. I didn't get to hear. I usually can't get to the broadcast on Thursdays and Fridays until about like 9:15. So I don't know what the commentary about hair was, but I did have an incident regarding my hair, but I didn't mention it because I tried not to really talk too much about the hair thing, but I will share it since it's on the table. I am natural as well. I have been for a very long time, but I go through different variations of what it might look like. Like, I'll shave completely bald. I've had locks. I've had fro, all of that. And I'll twist it. I'm a huge fan of wigs too, all that thing. So just depending on what stage or, you know, what period would determine what I look like. So this last iteration has been me just wearing a lot of what people call protective styling. So my hair is either twisted or really in my bonzi. I was doing my bonzi. And that's when your hair is, you wrap your hair with string or yarn, and then you create like designs and whatnot. Like, I could just do, it would look like a French braid, but it's my bonzi. And I was doing that for a while. And then I decided I was tired of that, and I just wanted to be free. Like, in the winters, I'm in Virginia, so it was cold, you know, so I didn't want it out. Anyway, but then I was like, I can't do it anymore. I need to just, like, be free. So I did, and I've been rocking my fro ever since. So when I went to work, it was the first time that they had ever seen me like that. And the now I just, I mean, I guess I could say racist suspect, but really, I don't, you know, he's classified as white. He functions as white. He is a so-called Egyptian, but I mean, you know, I don't know. Maybe he's just confused and I'm confused. It's all really confusing, but I just, my code with him is to treat him as if he's white. He is classified as white, and he, as far as I can tell, he functions as white, and he does mistreat black people. I've observed that, so that's that. So I come into work, and he just keeps looking at me, looking away, looking at me, looking away, looking at me, looking away, doing this whole thing. And I already know what it is. I'm not that confused. And then he asked me what happened to my hair. No emotion about it. I practice, like, if there was a practice that I practice, it is not being emotional about anything. I'm just tired, like way too tired to be emotional about anything anymore. So I was already ready for it. And I said, nothing happened to it. This is my hair when I'm not controlling it. And I think a combination of my tone and my response set that at ease, or, you know, pushed him away. Now, what I think is interesting in my observations about my ability to maneuver in my workplace environment, whether it's at school or at work with my fro, is that it also, I don't want to say commands or demands, or it's something about my embracing of myself that creates an environment that I'm a little bit more respected. I'm cautious with saying, you know, it commands respect or anything like that, because I'm still mistreated. I'm still black and they're still, you know, mistreating me. So, but there's something about it. And that je ne sais quoi, or that something, I feel is very empowering. And from here forth on, I probably won't be braiding, twisting, wigging, none of that. Like, let the fro grow. That's pretty much my stance on that. So if there's any young, you know, people out there, like, you just be confident in yourself, and whatever the texture or anything like that, do your research so that you're not, you know, I don't want to say looking a hot mess, but some people, when you don't know what to do, you don't know what to do when it shows. Like, don't be that person. Learn yourself and what to do, and find your own unique style. And you can be very professional. It doesn't have to be all, like, slick back, whatnot. I'll say that. But before I forget, I was listening to a conversation that you all had with Dr. Welzing. I forget the date, but for Mr. Firefighter, since you're here, you asked, this is when you had a commentary about Burger King having Halloween black buns. She made the pun about ebony buns, and it was funny. But you had a question about a situation about a young man on a team who they were calling Spade. And you wanted to know, well, what do you, like, some suggestions that she would give. She said to post
the exercises in Black self-respect or Black mental health or the 10 stops. I forget exactly what she called it, but it's all the same thing, that list. My question is, did you post it? And if you posted it, what happened? Because I was very curious to know, you know, what became of that. And that's one thing. The next thing is will admit for full transparency that I definitely do fear white people. I've mentioned this before. I've talked about it before. And it's not a comfortable thing to admit, but it is very real. I do fear what they can do for my career, like in terms of just like, impeding my ability to have a career, what they could just, the physical harm they could do to me or my family. Like, white people are not, like, I'm very uncomfortable around white people, and I get tense. So I work on that. That's something I have to work on every day. And I accept that I'm a victim, and that's just what it is. With that being said, though, so sometimes it's harder to speak or, like, practice our code. I remember that was on the table maybe a few weeks ago. Now, my code has evolved now to be courteous to white people. So when I'm at work, I do my job. That is what I get paid to do. Now, when you catch me on the street, it's a whole nother thing. I mean, I'm so courteous, but I'm not, you know, when I'm at work, I'm one way, and when I'm in my life, it's another way. I get paid to do my job, and as a healthcare professional and as I matriculate on in my career, like, that's my code. However, or what I've observed, this is what I wanted to share. What I've observed is by having a strong work ethic, like, I'm good at what I do, also being courteous to everybody. Like, you, if you met me at my job, you would never think that I participate in the cows and be talking about white people. You just wouldn't. Now, that allows me maneuverability, flexibility. But what it also, I've observed, allows me to manifest the self-respect, which is what we're talking about, but also shower Black people with just positivity is a simple way to put it. For instance, and even like, okay, there's two. So number one, I'm at the pharmacy, and there's this boy, this young guy, young boy, really, and he's in, like, a karate suit, and he has, like, a black yellow belt, and I love kung fu movies, like, I really do, and he just looked so cool, you know, and I know that, you know, encouragement is so important for young people. I'm all the way in the pharmacy, though. He's not at the pharmacy. He's, like, over there someplace. And, like, I had the potato in my throat where I wanted to speak, but I was like, if I speak, maybe it don't look good. And I said, well, whatever. I'll probably never see this little boy again. And I want to tell him that what he's doing is fantastic, and he should just keep it up. So I do. And the suspected racist pharmacist was there at the pharmacy, and I just, you know, I was like, hey, you know, I see you, you know, doing what you're doing. You look real nice in your, you know, suit or whatever it is, I said. And, you know, he's teasing ear to ear, just a glowing, because he just got off a karate practice and he's like a black belt. And, you know, and I felt really good for him and good in that moment too. And I observed how the response that the suspected racist pharmacist had, all of his nonverbals and all that. And when we are polite and kind and courteous and giving and positive with one another, I can't say that it demands that they respect us, but I think it does neutralize to some extent the disrespect or the negative view they have. Like, they might still have it, but there's the thing between us that we just share kind of buffers. I don't know if that makes sense, but I could feel it. The second thing is, I was back at the pharmacy and I was helping a black woman with her prescription, and I had nothing to do with why things weren't working out for her at all. I was doing my everything to try to get it to work. You know, insurance is what it is. I'm doing the best I can. Well, she's very, like, she's just not liking me at all, and very rude, very disrespectful, called me out of my name, all kinds of craziness. And I was like, I didn't even expect any of this from you right now. And, like, she's just going in on me, you know? And so when the pharmacist tried to, like, hype it to get me to react and be like, she said what? She did what? I said, no, it's totally cool. She's just having a rough day and whatever, to give her that leeway. Like, I'm not Aaron, our business in front of you. I don't. She could have still come back and called me the B word again. That's between us, not you. And I'm not going to talk about her with you. And I'm not going to let you use me to make you feel good about us acting out like that. And so that was another thing. And I think that's all I'll share for now to give other folks a chance to talk. But those are the just to make it clear, the evolution to the code is like the extreme courteousness. I finally understand what Dr. Wellesley and Mr. Fuller are talking about, because it used to get on my nerves when they would say, I'm not just to be transparent, but I get it. By being that super courteous to everybody, I'm also able to do it a lot for Black people, and it doesn't look extra. Where now people are like, oh, Emmy over there, and all she likes is Black people. She got something against white people. No, Emmy treats everybody with respect and courteousness and whatnot, and she's very polite. And every now and then, you know, Black people just get extra from her. And there's, you know, you can't really distinguish it, because I am courteous and polite with everyone. So I do appreciate you all listening.
Grand. Another illustration of Black self-respect. It's been a theme for the evening, I guess, right up there with natural hair being terrorized in the workplace for Black female workers. But Black self-respect, that is a tough one, because I know for many of us, Gus T included, that is not the easiest time to exercise Black self-respect when you have a Black person, a victim of white supremacy, who is upset. And perhaps not rightfully so upset with you, and, you know, cursing at you and calling you all kinds of nasty, filthy names and what have you. That is the time when it is a real challenge to demonstrate the highest levels of Black self-respect. But at minimum, I am not going to allow this to be a moment where I bond with a race soldier and, oh yeah, she was acting a fool and you waiting, I'm going to get a, get out of here. You're still a racist. You know, she got on my nerves and did whatever, but I am not going to sit up here and act like we're cool and allow this to be, you know, entertainment for you to watch the niggers in conflict on the job. I think that's outstanding and can be real, real difficult to do in the workplace. But I think that's spectacular effort. With the hair piece that you kind of began everything with, I think that's great to have the non-emotional response and to be prepared. I think frequently, man, I think that's when you can be at your best, when you're already expecting. Not only are you not shocked, I expected them to come out of their mouth and say something crass or rude, because I'm coming in, I'm displaying my Black self-respect, I'm not trying to have my hair chemically mutilated. I expected somebody to come out and say something ridiculous, racist, and I already had my response ready. Non-emotional response prepared. That is spectacular codification that can be applied not just to, you know, hair situations, but can be applied across the board with regards to counter racism. If other folks, we are winding down in the broadcast. Oh, I guess before I get retired firefighter, because I guess Emmy did ask a question of retired firefighter about how he followed up with the situation, the young Black male student being called Spade. We had one other caller who wrote in since we went live, Black female. She said, my boss was upset that I was completing my work too quickly, much more quickly than my white coworker. She would micromanage, there's that word again, and try to search for any mistakes I may have made. She will even search older files I worked on to look for a mistake. She couldn't find any mistakes. She always comes around very passive-aggressive, asking me how I'm able to do all of these things efficiently. I said the work is easy. What my white boss did was she had my keyboard replaced with a broken keyboard that had missing buttons and had buttons that don't work at all in an attempt to slow me down simply because I work faster and much better than my white coworker. Trashy, tacky, terroristic. And again, I say for a lot of black people, a lot of non-white people, period, in the world, we do not understand white supremacy racism. We do not understand what it means to be white. We go on job situations and these type of things happen and we are dumbfounded, flabbergasted, because we think, oh man, I go in, I'm working efficiently, I'm working hard. You said black people are ignorant and retarded forever. If I go in and I'm doing great work, that'll show them. No, that's not what they're concerned about at all. Even, I mean, this sort of thing sounds like you're messing up company efficiency, giving you a broken keyboard. That's wasting company time. You're with, you know, the guys we heard earlier who are spending 2 hours smoking cigarettes. You might as well just go ahead and go outside and smoke cigarettes if you're going to have a broken keyboard and that's going to drag down your efficiency rate. They don't care about that. They care most. The primary concern is white supremacy, racism, making fun of, mistreating, abusing non-white people, especially black people. That is the number one priority above and beyond everything else. And when you go on job situations not understanding that, woo, that can put you in a situation for a lot of confusion, chaos, and turmoil, in addition to all the mistreatment. Retired firefighter, did you want to follow up on how you dealt with the spade situation and Dr. Welsing's recommendation of posting the 10 stops?
Yes, I'll make an attempt. Because the question was so far back in Ms. Emmy's talk, but I'll give it a try. I've never heard the young person referred to as spade much at all, actually. It may have been, quote unquote, out of respect of me. I don't know, but I did speak directly to it with the coaching staff at the time. One thing about the business of coaching, it the nature of it changes a whole lot. I'm not even at the school anymore as of about several months ago, because the head football coach who I've been with for about 20 to 25 years, he went to the college level at Florida A&M, back to his alma mater, and I haven't actually been there at all in 2018. Anyway, the young person that she is speaking of, he was a very, very proficient student in school. I think I may have mentioned that. And in turn, he actually had a academic scholarship at FIU and a football scholarship at another college. He asked me on which one he should accept, the football scholarship or the academic scholarship, and it was like a no-brainer for me, the academic scholarship. And as we speak, I'm assuming that he is still as a student, not too far from me, at Florida International University. I did at one time ask him about what is his perceived profession that he's going to pursue, and I think it may have been a physician. He certainly has the frame for it as far as his proficiency as a student. Hopefully it transfers into that particular goal. We need physicians. Hopefully he abandons the advent of having an attraction, unfortunately, with white females. He did have a quote-unquote white girlfriend. I was gratified to understand that I wasn't the only black person at the high school that did not like the idea that he had this particular relationship. I think I mentioned on the program a black female who showed a tremendous amount of black self-respect when she really got a white male, the white male with the athletic record that interrupted her when she was talking. And she just really, in a professional way, ripped him apart into interrupting her. And she has mentioned about her dislike of him having a quote unquote white girlfriend herself. So I haven't talked to him in a while, in months, but I'm pretty sure I'm going to contact him and give a more official report. But I'm assuming he's doing okay, and is heading towards his goals, just like any other young person, especially a young person that's non-white. They're going to have mistakes along the way, but for the most part, I think he is still pursuing what he has set out to do. And as I mentioned before, hopefully I'm answering the question that I didn't hear that quote unquote nickname anymore after I mentioned directly in a coaching meeting. Spoke directly. Yes, ma'am.
My question, did you post the list, the stops? That's my real question. Like, did you post those stops in the locker room or the office? And if you did, how did people respond to having that list in that space?
Oh, I'm trying to remember on what I did with that. And I got a bad memory because that was actually, it's got to be almost, a year ago. I really can't remember exactly what I did with it and what was the reaction of it. Whatever reaction it was, it probably wasn't a quote unquote happy ending like the movie Black Panther is so called portraying. That's why it's getting me so hard to remember it. I don't think it was that much of a deal, but in focusing on the person, as I mentioned before, I still think that he is heading in a positive, constructive way. And the whole idea about calling someone a name like that was emphasized to the staff, and I didn't hear it anymore. But I can't recall on what took place with the 10 stops. I can't recall exactly. I can't remember it. But I'm pretty sure it wasn't something spectacular. I'm pretty sure about that.
Thank you.
Did I answer your question?
Yes, thank you.
Great.
There was one more thing that I wanted to mention. It does have something to do with the quote unquote Dade County Public Schools down here in Miami-Dade County. Can I proceed?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Miami-Dade County, probably, if not the top employer, is in the top two in Miami-Dade County of Dade County Public Schools. And the superintendent of Dade County Public Schools, I believe his name is Alberto Carvalho, was offered to be the superintendent of the largest public school system in this part of the world, maybe in the world itself, but definitely in this part of the world in New York. And being his quote-unquote dramatic self, this is a white male, he turned it down. The reason why I'm mentioning Dade County Public Schools to him is because there's been a lot of opposition having a constructive relationship with non-white black people and their children in Dade County Public Schools for a long period of time. To whereas there were some black people who had enough self-respect to attempt to organize efforts against this problem by creating an organization called ICARE. Mr. Clark is one of the top officials in this organization. And the primary opposition is that there is plenty of opportunities of employment and grants and other things that are supposed to be awarded to black children, the possibility for black people being employed due to contracts, and non-white black people are getting less than 2% of things that they're supposed to be getting. When ideas come up by this organization, ICARE, it is usurped, and the ideas end up going to people who need it less than non-white black people. And it's an ongoing situation. Mr. Cavallo, from my observations, and I informed Mr. Clark about this a couple of days ago, is a very refined racist. Because what he does is, with these small trinkets of a gesture of I'm helping the quote-unquote black community, he would go and also call the press to get a whole lot of attention from the public to make it seem like he is actually doing something he actually isn't. He's very refined in how he does that. Just wanted to give an update on what's going on in Miami-Dade County on a daily basis in this part of the world. Thank you.
Mr. Clark, guest on the program, Before the Flood, 2017, and that very, very common in a variety of different workplace settings where black people come up with just spectacular ideas, concepts, things to make money or things that would be helpful, in this case, trying to help students down in South Florida. And then race soldiers come along and boop, we'll just take whatever ideas or take whatever credit that you originally came up with. That is, you know, standard operating procedure. I've seen that even for entrepreneurs, standard operating procedure, where race soldiers master deceivers. A part of that deception sometimes is just outright theft. We had one other person that wrote in, and then I'll make sure we didn't miss any callers. A person said, I'm a long-term substitute teacher in the tri-state area. I am not sure if that's like the New York, New Jersey tri-state area. I think Connecticut might be the other one there, or if that's south. They have a couple places that are known as tri-state area. Anyway, I teach in a predominantly black school. I'm one of three black men in the school, the only one who is a teacher. I do like eating my lunch with the white teachers during my lunch break. They have invited me down several times. I've gone down twice. I think that was supposed to be, I do not like eating my lunch with the white teachers. I have gone down twice. I do not like the environment. They only want me down there with them so they can pry into my life. It's a waste of time. I usually use my lunch periods to grade papers, eat my lunch, and prepare for the next class. Whenever I am invited downstairs, I decline for those reasons. Since I started this pattern of behavior, these teachers no longer speak to me. When I say good morning or good evening, they ignore me. Should I be worried about the change in their behaviors? It is definitely a concern, definitely something to make note of. But, you know, if the trade-off is they will stop ignoring me if I come down and eat lunch with them so that they can ask me a lot of prying questions about my life and what I do beyond school hours and that sort of thing, I'm not sure. I'll just have to be courteous. As I said, you're not trying to be aloof. You speak. Good morning, Helen. Good morning, Susan. The rest of these folks. But, you know, hey, I got planning to do and papers to grade. I'm busy. You know, I got to be efficient. Got to maximize my teacher planning hours. Continuing, he says, also, I recently invited my grandfather in to talk to my students about marching with Dr. King and growing up as a sharecropper in the South. A white female teacher who teaches at the same grade level decided to combine the classes so they could hear my grandfather speak. During the discussion, she had the students stand one at a time to tell the story of her tragic arrangement in which the black guy she was with was pulled out of the car and stabbed while they were driving. Don't know if this was planned, but it was really awkward. Just recently, the same racist suspect teacher told a student during her class that he's acting like he was addicted to drugs. The student accused then storms out of the class. That same teacher then comes to me saying that she was approached by the black principal saying what she did was a big no-no. The student who stormed out of the class is failing my class for the year. I have already written a report for retention. The white teacher, who is now trying to cover herself, requested that she speak to me after school, in which she shared this information. Then she logged onto her computer and tried to have me write up another report on this student. I declined because I had to rush to my after-school job. However, she insisted that I go home and write up another report on how the student has completely decided to no longer do his work in my class. I feel like this teacher is racist and is planning to set me up somehow. She is the one insisting that I eat lunch with the other white teachers. Any advice? It sounds like she's scheming in two directions. It's been my experience that there can be quite a bit of vindictiveness in the workplace, particularly I'd say with white women, but in the workplace in general with whites, where if they feel, you know, aggrieved somehow, you didn't eat with us, or you didn't, you know, you didn't help me set up this Negro student, you know, that to make sure I covered myself, so now I'm upset with you. That could be the case. And it's kind of the same thing as with we were talking about with the construction worker. Knowing the policy and procedure, continue doing the correct thing on the job, and just be very mindful of that, that, hey, I'm going in every day with the intention of doing the correct thing, going in and trying to do the best that I can with my job, and also knowing that I have race soldiers who might be looking to cause problems for me. So I'm going to be very alert about that as well, particularly anybody, if there's already something coming up about her wanting you to log a report in, being mindful if anything suspicious comes up, any reports come up that you didn't author, or any reports get edited, any changes that you didn't make, I'd be mindful of that sort of thing. But just continue going about your work, trying to do the best job that you can, and be very mindful that you have some people that might want to do you some harm, and you have to be alert for that as well. Did any of the folks listening in have suggestions for our teacher here, which you'd recommend?
Can I be heard?
Heard both
I'm
of
sorry,
you.
Sorry, you can go ahead. Oh, thank you. No, I was just going to say that perhaps he should probably eat lunch with them, but keep the conversation work-related as opposed to personal-related. I've had these situations where every once in a while suspected racists will invite me out for lunch. Generally, I just keep it very general, talk mostly about the job, don't really talk about my personal life. If they ask questions about my personal life, I'll sort of turn the question back on them and ask them the same question, or figure out a way to ask the same question. Because I've noticed that racist suspects tend to be very selfish and self-centered. And if you can get them to start talking about themselves, they will do it for a long period of time. But that's my only suggestion. Thank you.
Was that read in Nevada? You also had a suggestion?
Yes, thank you. And actually, the black female from Wisconsin, I was definitely going to say something similar to that. That's a tactic that I actually practice now when suspected racists, they do ask me personal questions. I keep it very short and as superficial as possible. And then, like she said, I do also try to turn it back on them, like, oh, do you want kids? Or, oh, I don't know if I don't know. Well, how about, you know, you, what are your plans for the future? Just to really, I feel like that can also kind of play into like their ego boost, to try to make it seem as if you do, care about, you know, whatever nonsense they have going on in their life or whatever nonsense they're feeling. So that way they don't have to, you know, gather information about you and then try to, of course, use it against you. That's all I wanted to add. Thank you.
Appreciate that. Nevada, Wisconsin. Do we have any other suggestions for our teacher dealing with the racist woman in the classroom?
Right. May I be heard?
Yes, sir.
This is Jenna calling out of Chattanooga. My advice, of course, I'm not no teacher, but in these particular situations, what I normally do is, just like Red in Nevada said, is that I always turn it back on them, you know, make them answer some questions. One of the things, even before I started listening to the Cows, is that I always like to ask questions. And I noticed that whenever you get to asking them questions, they begin to run, whether mentally or physically. They will mentally try to change the conversation, or either they will physically get away from you. And that kind of leads to the question that I had for the family tonight, was that today we had a meeting about our bonuses that we were getting. And some insignificant things came up. One of them was cleanup. And what I do is manual labor. So there's liable to be iron dust or anything on the floor when people walk through. And I was making a comment to the head boss. I guess you would call him the right now it's not even coming to my mind what his actual title is. But I was telling him that all of that sound good as far as cleaning up, but y'all want 10 to 12 units out, and we build records. So y'all want 10 to 12 units out, but then you want it to be clean. I was like, that's not going to happen. So he wanted to argue. So I stopped him in the middle of his statement, and I was like, listen, you the boss around here. Everybody knows that. So I'm not here to debate with you. What I'm telling you is that it's not going to happen. You know, so it was a whole bunch of runaround, and it ended up being, well, we just need y'all to clean up. I was like, well, that's fine. But like what Red in Nevada and the other young lady, I can't remember what her name was, she was stating that everybody wants to come up and ask questions afterwards. And my thing is that when they're doing that, my initial reaction is to tell them off, not necessarily in a mean, vulgar type of way. But like I say, I like to ask questions. So I ask so many questions till they all just scatter. And I'm just wondering what the family's reaction to my reaction would be. Is there anything better that I could do, or am I going down the right path? Thank you for taking my question, Gus.
Yes, sir. Hang on 1 second. There might even be one that we can revisit next week because we're kind of winding down. And I did want to check in to make sure we didn't miss any of the folks who dialed in. The caller at 4852. Did you have a commentary? 4852. Did we miss you, or were you already able to share? 4852.
Yes. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes. Really, you know, just to wrap it up, I was just going to give two things that I like to do that help me at work. One thing is always anticipating mistreatment. I notice that when I anticipate mistreatment, I'm not in a reactionary state. I'm very poised and not emotional when tacky, trashy comments may be made, or I may see things going in that direction. I'm just more in control when I'm already trying to think a step ahead or anticipate interactions and what they can be like. And another thing is, I know Neely Fuller mentioned this, is having a mindset of, you know, everyone being on the same team, or at least operating like that. You know, even though you may know there may be some, you know, trashy, you know, or, you know, tacky energy being directed in your way, if you operate under the notion that, you know, we're all on the same team, we all work for the same company, why wouldn't people want to give me certain information, or why wouldn't people want to help us succeed as a company? So the person who was talking about someone changing a keyboard out, that is in direct conflict with what a company's goals would want to be. So you definitely want to note things like that and operate under that notion and ask those questions. Questions are a great way to, you know, divert conversation. Don't recommend idle conversation at all. So always asking a question directed towards work is a great way to either get on track or find a way to get back to your desk and do work. So, yeah, just wanted to leave that comment. Thanks, everyone.
For sure. I think last person, just making sure we did not miss anybody. The person, if you're on the VOPE line, if you had commentary, you should be with us. The caller on the VOPE line.
Is that me, Gus?
Greetings, HV. Good to hear from you.
Good to hear from you. Greetings, Gus, and to the rest of the callers and listeners. I had a lot of things, but I'm going to just say one of them real quick. To the software developer in Wisconsin, it seems like you, I think you said before that you had a project that was done early and they were attacking you for that. And it seemed like tonight with the thing with the high priority project that you were involved in, it seemed like that stood out as well as like exemplary work on your part, and they seem to just keep on attacking you. And I think that's just, you know, what it is. And I also wanted to let you know, I think one time you said that you don't speak well and that you write better. I disagree with you. I learn a whole lot from you every time that you speak. You seem very, very codified and very succinct every time that you speak about something, even when you speak on other topics, on the compensatory call-in about the Black Panther review. I think you gave a brief one. Another thing I wanted to say real quick with Thomas in New York, that genital thing with his fly, I think that he might need to go, you know, report that or even just document that and have some type of, figure out some sort of recourse to shut that down, to make sure that, you know, that doesn't keep up, because that seems like a massive amount of sexual harassment, and all the Black self-respect that was displayed tonight, or, you know, in your respective jobs, just from the caller in Florida and Emmy, and even just not even just letting someone not having a conflict in front of a white person about somebody doing something extreme, which is calling you out or your name. That was just incredible. And so that's all I wanted to share. And thanks for taking my call.
Indeed. Indeed. Oh my God. The person 4467, and we could not have people wait till the last minute. If you have commentary for workplace racism, that would be grand. The person at 4467, did you have commentary?
Good night, everyone. I apologize for dialing in so late, but I kind of was listening kind of late. I'm new. You can call me Naeem. I've been listening for some time, and I'm thankful for the opportunity to actually provide some commentary. I'm based out of New York, similar to Thomas, out of New York. And so one of the things that I wanted to comment on was the state of the workplace and what you should do, at least from my perspective. One of the things that's consistent is asking questions does seem to get a lot of things in, I guess, a better place for you. You know, being able to find out exactly what suspected racists might be thinking, also taking some pressure off of you. And another thing that I found that has been very consistent, regardless of where I have been, now I'm young, I'm only 25, but it has been consistent for at least a decade, and since I've really started working, is that you're always being watched. Case in point is I have never had to ask for a raise. I've always been given a raise, and the conversation has always been the same. Hey, you know, we've seen what you've been doing, and we've heard what people have said about you. Always surprised, but now I've learned not to be. That, you know, you're always being watched and people are always making sure that information is going back to the person that has the power, which is the white racist. So thank you.
Great code to follow. Appreciate first time caller. Glad you were able to participate. Hopefully this will not be the last time, but absolutely. I agree with that. I think we talked about that on the broadcast as well, that you should consistently function as though you are under surveillance, like electronic surveillance, audio recording. If you know, that means some people are listening in, snitching on you, all of the above and probably some more to just get accustomed to functioning that in that manner. That way, hey, it's no problem. Everything that I say, I assume you already heard it anyway. So I'm very precise about what I say at all times, what I'm doing. Just keeping that in mind, function that way on the job. I think that'll put you in a much better position to just think like that from the beginning. Then you won't be shocked when they come and say, oh, yeah, we, you know, we're watching you down on such and such and such and such and heard what you had to say about it. I expected that. We will be here next week, same time, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific, Racists Willing. We will also be here tomorrow. New book, The Hate U Give, Angie Thomas, Black female author. It's been a while since we did a young adult novel on the cows, or not even novel. We've done young adult literature before, but I don't think we've done an actual young adult novel before. So looking forward to that, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific tomorrow evening. We'll be here obviously Saturday for the compensatory call-in. And Sunday we will be here before the flood. We were trying to get Cheryl Reynolds on the program. She has this program in Georgia where it's like come meet a black person. And they invite white people out to talk about racism and to sit down at a table, small table, and meet a black person and chat with them. And this is somehow supposed to work against racism. And I said, wow, this for many reasons, I'd be curious to hear more information about this. The reported founder, Ms. Reynolds, she is a black female. She should be with us Sunday evening, 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 p.m. Pacific. Got the impression when we were talking about this before the flood, at least online, that a number of people were familiar with this and intrigued for a number of reasons. And I thought we were supposed to do this back in December. And anyway, that should be this coming Sunday. Again, the iTunes feed has not updated, but the archives are available for the most recent programs that are not there. It's only two. They are at SoundCloud. They are at Black Talk Radio Network and elsewhere. Hopefully that problem will be corrected soon so that all of the feeds will be current. But that is also a part of the system of white supremacy to be expected. If you have any other issues, not being able to access anything in the archives, if you have a guest suggestion, any other recommendations or gripes, feel free to drop an email. UntilJustice@gmail.com. UntilJustice@gmail.com. Huge thanks all the folks for participating, tuning in. I hope it was a constructive investment of your Thursday evening. Again, sobriety would be best under conditions of white supremacy. We want to make sure that our brain computers are functioning at the highest possible level to produce concepts, solutions to the problem, racist man, racist woman, racist child, whites. I think Dr. Welsing, Dr. Cambon, Mr. Fuller, Minister Malcolm X, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., 50-year, and well, won't say anniversary, but it's 50 years since Dr. King was assassinated coming up next month. I think all of them would co-sign on sobriety being best for us solving this problem. You certainly do not want to be behind the wheel of a vehicle and be stopped by Daniel Holtzclaw and have that be the time that you were not about sobriety. I don't think that's going to improve that situation at all. Also, if you're going to be in a vehicle, buckle up. Let's do everything we can to minimize contact with race soldiers, badge or no. That's it. Creator, we ask that you help us remain patient with other black people, victims of white supremacy. We ask that you help us remain patient with ourselves. Remind us to demonstrate the highest levels of black self-respect at all times, in all places, each and every time we are in contact with another black person. It has been time. Replace white supremacy with justice immediately. Cows signing out. Thanks all for tuning in.
Nigga, you so brainwashed.
I'm a victim,
your
brother.
Problem. You're a victim.
I'm a victim of 400 years of conditioning.
Shut up.
The man has programmed my conditioning.
Mm-hmm.
Even my conditioning has been conditioned.